This is the Taser Hill Update for August 19th, 2018. I'm Filippo D'Anelfo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Parkins.
I'm Daniel Victoria.
I'm Chris Sologi.
And I'm Lee Lamb.
Kind of an eventful week this week. Gamescom is, well, technically gets started tomorrow. Somebody from Team Ninja or around Team Ninja didn't get that message. So, yeah. So we'll be talking about what happened there, and along with some other stories that we kind of have to keep following because they've developed since we talked about them last week. So yeah, we'll get into that. But before we do, well, let's talk about what we've been up to this week. And yeah, Lee, you haven't been here since the whole PC saga unfolded.
I feel like it happened because I left.
Well, it was like it actually started the day that we did an interview with Castlevania Ryan. So I actually crashed in the middle of that show, and from that point on, I couldn't get more than a few minutes of recording time. So yeah, turns out I had some very big issues with my PC that if I had checked the power supply first, I probably would have been able to solve with just that.
And save how much money?
I'll save about almost 600.
That's always nice.
Yeah, that would have been nice, but
that's isn't that like 4 million Canadian?
Yeah, basically. Well, this is 600 Canadian, so I think I saved maybe about $8.50. So yeah, we'll see that. But you know, it did give me an excuse to actually upgrade this thing, so that's
and you should be good for the future now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm on a platform that has some legs to it now. I'm very pleased with the Ryzen platform. It's damn quick. I guess anything would be an improvement for me because I was on an FX8350, and that thing is like a toaster with a heatsink attached to it. So yeah, it wasn't particularly efficient. It wasn't particularly quick, even though it was 8-core. It didn't really do a heck of a lot. So this thing just runs circles around it. So, and it's, overclocks quite nicely, I will say. Yeah, got mine running at around 4.1 steady. So I'm, very pleased with that. So for the price of, less than an 8700K, you can get something that actually outperforms it. So yeah, why wouldn't you? So next up for me on that front is going to be a GPU, well, it's not time to buy a GPU right now because tomorrow NVIDIA is going to be rumored to be announcing the new GeForce RTX 20 series. Yes, I said RTX, not GTX. They're changing the branding there, and they're bringing in something that people have wanted to do for years, but computationally it hasn't been possible, and that's real-time ray tracing. That shit is going to be just bananas nice. But yeah, if they segment it to like just the higher-end cards, which is what the rumors say that they're going to do, that's going to actually prove to be a problem. So we'll see how that goes. Either way, I'm not buying a GPU right now. Just wait for NVIDIA to make their announcement and then wait for AMD to follow and then look at investing in a GPU. In the meantime, my R9 290 will be just chucking out heat into my face while I game, so that's a good thing for the winter. So,
Do it. Yeah, I was going to say, save yourself on the heating bills, pal.
Finally, after like 3 weeks stuck in customs, I finally got that SNES Classic that Dan Reb sent up.
Oh my god, Phil.
Yeah. Three. I hate customs. I really do. Technically, I can't even buy in Quebec because the packaging isn't bilingual. So, yeah, fuck that shit. Yeah. So I got that and I hacked it. That's actually pretty straightforward. Tweaking it once you do get it hacked, however, does require some doing. Because there are some games that you will find don't work quite right on the stock emulator. There are ways around that, because there are patches for the ROMs that you can apply to fix some stuff. There's presets in the emulator themselves that you can apply, but it's all stuff that you have to research and look up. For instance, Chrono Trigger will run just fine, mostly, if you just stick it on there with the stock emulator, but you're going to have sound issues. So that's one.
And
of
you don't want sound issues with that game.
No. So you want to. That's one of the ones that you just have to actually change a preset for, and then it runs fine.
Well, what you do is you play the game, then you just have a YouTube clip of Robo's theme playing the entire time.
Yeah,
you're
that's,
good.
That's yeah, that's a way around it too. But yeah, so there's that. So far, I've got about 60 games on there. It's like I'm not trying to limit it up with everything.
Isn't there a limit?
There is a physical limit. You have 300 megabytes of storage space that you can use. However, it can be expanded.
Really?
Yeah. If you need a right angle USB OTG adapter, you can pick those up with power. You can pick those up with about $10 on Amazon. They're not expensive. And that will let you use USB sticks. So up to, I think it'll see a 32. Yeah, it will see a 32. Not sure about a 64, but yeah. So
thank you, Nintendo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's actually pretty open, pretty easy to get into. It's like you can even like completely replace the entire OS that it's running and just turn it into a dedicated RetroArch box if you wanted to go that way.
Oh, take my money.
So yeah, you could do that. It'll run N64 games just fine as long as you do the you install the swap file mod onto your USB drive. Otherwise, some of the higher end N64 games will crash because they run out of memory.
Turok 2s and
Turok 2s and like Resident Evils and stuff.
Oh man, I was really hoping I could stick an expansion pack in this thing.
Well, Perfect Dark and stuff like that. It'll actually run all of the expansion pack stuff. It's just, if you don't have the
swap
file.
You have to teach it how.
Yeah, it'll just kind of crash after a while because it'll just run out of memory.
That's what happens to my child when he's tired.
It just crashes.
That's what we're going to start calling it crashes because he runs out of memory.
Yeah. So it's actually very straightforward to do. It's just, there's a lot of tedium involved because you have to do this on a ROM-by-ROM basis unless you're interested in going the RetroArch route straight away and just completely bypass all of the Nintendo stuff entirely. Because the RetroArch cores, I don't know if you noticed, are actually a lot better than anything that Nintendo has. So I'm just doing this because I want to keep it as, more or less true to what it is. I just want to add ROMs. I don't really want to replace too much, but there's some ROMs that I'm going to have to. So,
well, Phil, we're definitely going to have a discussion about this offline because I'm curious about your tweaks, particularly with Chrono Trigger, because I do want to play that again, and I don't want to play it on the 3DS.
Yeah.
That's a good one, though.
No, it is, but I have a 65-inch TV. I have speakers that are so loud, my neighbors can hear them. And I love Chrono Trigger's music, so.
And besides, you want your neighbors to love them, too.
Exactly. Like, hey, it's like, oh, what's Lee doing? Oh, he must be playing Chrono Trigger. Yeah.
Yeah, I hear that. So that's it for me. How about you, Pat?
Still on my whole post-Evo kind of fighting game binge. A lot of Super Turbo. Still enjoying Fighting EX Layer quite a bit, which really supports a long-running theory that I've had that I would have quite enjoyed the Street Fighter EX games if had they not tried to pass themselves off as Street Fighter. I'm just really looking forward to the DLC that's coming for that game and seeing how far Arika can run with it because they've got a really good thing going there. And, of course, Tekken 7 because that's pretty much my main current fighting game. Out of the bunch, and just still going into rank mode and working on playing King better. So it's coming.
Cool.
That it?
Yeah, I'm not ready to go back to Octopath yet and tie a bow on it, but
all right,
it's coming. Well,
yeah, well, I'm playing Octopath as well, and I have officially finished all of Chapter 3. Nice. Yeah. So now I have
to ask, Ulbricht's Chapter 3, how'd you like it?
The one where he... God, I'm trying to remember. See, I actually finished Ulbricht's Chapter 3 sometime back. I'm trying
to...
It's
the one where that... That desert town gets invaded by lizard beasts.
Oh, the one where the final duel with Earhart. Texas? Yeah. Yeah, I remember. Yeah, I remember what you're talking about. Yeah, God, it was fine up until I had to duel with Earhart. Yeah. Mostly because Earhart is, like, really, really strong.
Hmm. Yeah.
And the thing about the doing any duels with Ulbricht is that you sort of go into them on the notion that you're usually stronger than the person you're going against, which is not the case with Earhart. He is equal to you, if not greater, in strength, depending on what your level is when you go up against him.
You have to go in with a whole bunch of curative items.
Yep. Yeah. But he can be beaten. It just takes... a lot of patience. But now I've gotten all of the chapter threes.
Did you take my advice about playing Ulbricht?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so yeah, I have a pretty good idea how you were able to beat Earhart then.
Yeah, he has not left my party since then. So
it's great, isn't it?
Yeah. I've done all the chapter threes. I attempted to do Primrose's chapter 4 last night. Ooh. And got so very close until I realized that. Oh, that right,
a sick fuck too.
Yeah, and you have to fight him twice.
Yep.
So, which
I saw that one coming because the first battle was rather anticlimactic.
Yeah, it was.
But I wasn't positive because it was only anticlimactic, I was thinking, because I had Ulbricht tee off on him a couple times.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so next one I'm going to try and give a shot is Ulbricht's Chapter 4, because that one is, holy, just walking into that place is like walking into hell.
Yep.
Basically, for those of you know who... to know, as far as the plot goes.
It's basically North Korea.
Yeah, so Earhart basically reveals that there's been this guy out and about, this guy named Werner, who is apparently used to be a mercenary commander and became a provincial lord in this place. Can't remember what the place is called, but he basically turned the place into his own personal dictatorship, and he has been doing all these public executions by burning. Basically, he started out doing all the criminals, and then the minor criminals, and then finding crimes for people so he could burn them, stuff like that.
Yep.
But yeah, and I still have to go, and I need to do those two sub-quest lines, because in order to get the final, the ultimate ending chapter, you have to go through them and finish them before it becomes available. So I'll have to look that up and see what that is.
You have to do some side quests, too. Yeah, I'm still trying to get there myself.
But, after that, other than that, I have been playing Death's Gambit, which I'm going to be doing for a review. And, basically, Death's Gambit is a 2D Dark Souls clone. And it's a good 2D Dark Souls clone, but it is definitely a 2D Dark Souls clone. Every way it is structured is just 100% Dark Souls. I swear there are parts of that thing that are directly meant to mimic Dark Souls in various ways. But basically, story is, you're this dude, he makes a deal with the Grim Reaper, and he has to go around and he has to kill these people called Immortals, which basically is this game's equivalent to, you know, the monsters and stuff you fought in Dark Souls and Demon Souls. And, you know, like I said, it's a 2D Dark Souls clone, so there's a lot of, like, you know, you have to deal with, like, a stamina bar. You have to deal with patience and being able to position yourself and being on the defensive sometimes because, again, much like in Dark Souls, if you're not careful, these things will annihilate you in a matter of seconds.
Okay, and how many times has that happened to you so far? You lost count?
Yeah, I need a calculator for that one.
He's like, enough!
Yeah. Now, fortunately, here's the thing. Unlike in Dark Souls, where, you know, if you die, you lose all of your souls. I'm going to call them souls. They're not called souls in this game, but that's what they are. In regular Dark Souls, you lose all your souls. In this game, what instead happens is you lose a bunch of your health items, your health recovery items, instead of losing all your souls. Now, you can spend a bunch of your souls to get all of those back, or you can try and track down the place where you died and get them back that way. So that's actually pretty different from Dark Souls. The game is good. Really, the problem is it is inevitably going to be compared to Dead Cells. Because they just came out at the same time. You know, like at a very short span between each other. Yeah. And I guess these types of games are just kind of in vogue this season. So, but yeah, it's pretty much what I've been playing. So, Dan Rabb, what about you?
Yeah, I'm still playing Octopath.
Yes.
I'm just a little bit behind where Brandon is. I just finished Chapter 3s for Ulbrich, Alfin, and Tressa. I'm working on Therion's as we speak, and I just stole a mask. So I was like, oh, shit, black market time. And, I just witnessed a murder happen, so there's that. And, yeah, I'm actually... out of all these, the one I'm liking the most is Alfin. Mm-hmm. Like, I just dealt with a chapter where, you know, he's this apothecary. He's a traveling healer who just, you know, tries to become the best healer he can be. And then he comes across somebody that he really shouldn't be healing because he's a psychopath murderer.
Mm-hmm.
And shit hits the fan in that chapter really hard.
Yep.
So, yeah. Ulbrich is pretty cool, too. I was pretty hyped to see that I had to go against Earhart one-on-one so early in the game. But luckily, I didn't have any problems with it at all. So, again, I'm using the whole Pokemon strategy of keeping everyone within the same level. Mm-hmm. The only problem being, you know, my main character is Haunted, so she's, like, at level 49 now compared to everyone else.
Nobody's like, going to touch that.
10 levels behind. So, yeah, she's, like, a crazy tank. The fact that she has that ability to attack twice randomly really helps out a lot. And, yeah, it's still a whole lot of fun. Again, my only problem being the lack of real interaction between the eight characters, which is unfortunate because they're all really cool people. There's nobody I hate in here.
So that's definitely been confirmed that even if you're going through the chapters and everything, they don't really interact with each other.
Seems they speak well.
They have something similar to Fire Emblem support conversations.
They do talk to each other.
But yeah, they do talk to each other. It's just that they don't really get involved in each other's stories in an intimate fashion. I'm guessing that happens in the end, but it hasn't happened yet for me.
I always liken it to the support or the incidental conversations that you can trigger in the Tales games.
Yeah, yep. Same thing.
Especially if you walk your party into a tavern, you can trigger them. They're pretty good. But by and large, I've compared the Octopath gang to the Akatsuki in that they really have their own quests and motivations and reasons for doing whatever they do, but they have this understanding that they're better off helping each other to achieve those ends.
Yeah, and the really cool thing about it is, like, they're not all there to save the world. They all have their own thing, and it just makes every character deeper in their own way. So
one guy's just there for gas money.
Basically, they all realized that there was strength in numbers, so they decided, this will work.
But yeah, that's 50 hours in, no end in sight. I believe every character only has 4 chapters, though, right? So I don't know.
Yeah, I would also say that each character has their own supporting cast to the point that player character to player character interaction isn't missed as much as you might think it would be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially with Tressa, from what I've seen so far.
Yeah.
I've also been playing Overcooked 2. I had a decision on whether I wanted to get it on PS4 or Switch. Ultimately, I chose PS4 because trophies. And I was dismayed to see that, Overcooked 2 is primarily a multiplayer game. Mm-hmm. So I figured, hey, I'll just go ahead and have my friends join me who actually have their own PSN accounts. And then, they can go ahead and enjoy the trophies that I get at the same time. Apparently, that's not the case. It's the person it's player one who's using the account that'll get all the trophies. And if you have friends with their own accounts, they don't get shit. So I was like, oh,
wow. Well,
sorry, guys. So, yeah, I read somewhere that was also the case with Overcooked 1, but nobody really cared because there's no platinum in that game. So, I don't know. I'm surprised that's something Team 17 didn't bother looking at. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's still a fun game. The throwing mechanic actually adds a whole lot to the game. There's a whole bunch of different random things that can happen to your kitchen. Like, for example, in the first chapter, you start off in a hot air balloon, and then you're just cooking and throwing things between yourselves on there. And then all of a sudden, a thunderstorm happens and knocks it pops your balloon, and you end up falling into another kitchen where you also have to make sushi in addition to the salads you were making. So, fun stuff. I've also been playing Madden NFL 19. The review is up on Smashpad. A lot of people don't like this year's long shot as much as last year's. Long shots is the single player campaign mode. The story mode. And I think the main reason why is that the first one had a whole lot of decisions that actually affect your gameplay, whereas this one focuses more on the football aspects rather than the decisions you make. So that whole Mass Effect Telltale thing isn't as powerful as it used to be. But be that as it may, I got a kick out of it. Rob Schneider plays the Cowboys general manager. You have this one dude.
Really?
Exactly. And that makes it absolutely more hilarious because I hate the Cowboys, and the decisions they make totally make it look like Rob Schneider really is the general manager. Yeah, he likens your guy as pretty much like he uses water bottles as a way to metaphorically guide your way through, and it's just fucking hilarious. We also have that one guy, I forget his name. His name escapes me from This Is Us and Luke Cage as the quarterback's coach, who treats your main character rather hard. He's against them. And then all of a sudden, he ends up being traded to the Houston Texans, who somehow got Bill Cowher to be their head coach and traded for Antonio Brown. All of this shit is just beyond understanding. But I was like, hey, man, whatever they want to do to make it to spice it up. And they did for me. Like, it's an absolutely hilarious experience. As for the gameplay, the big thing is player motion. And I think it's all horseshit. Basically, they advertise it as a way to really do a whole lot of different things after the catch for bigger gains. But when you actually perform these motions, it takes more time and more frames to do it, resulting in defenses catching up to your player faster. So just a whole lot of weird stuff. But I'm glad they brought back pass trajectory. So when you hold the L1 button, your quarterback throws the ball higher. You hold L2, he throws it lower. That's something they introduced in the previous game, and that was probably the best feature, and I'm glad they kept it, because Madden is notorious for bringing all these new features in and then taking them up the year after because it didn't matter. This one does matter, and it stayed in the game, so that's great. And, yeah, Madden 19 is good. I wouldn't recommend it for full price if you had last year's game. But if it's been a couple of years or you haven't played Madden in a while, this is actually a really good one to hop in. Hmm. I've also been playing Yakuza Kiwami 2. Nice. But I can't really go into much detail because I'm under embargo. But it's
again, you see what I meant when I said that Yakuza 2 was really in need of a remake?
Oh, yeah.
Make the best of it.
Mm-hmm. And the cool thing with Yakuza Kiwami 2 as opposed to Kiwami 1 was Kiwami was based off of Zero's system, whereas Kiwami 2 is based off of Six's system. So there's definitely some evolution here. Mm-hmm. And from what I remember when I played Yakuza 2 back on the PS2, it was PS2, right? It wasn't PS3, I'm trying to remember.
Yakuza 2 was PS2.
Yeah, it was PS2. I actually didn't finish the first PS2 version when that came out. So I'm not near where I was yet, but I'm getting there. And yeah, these quality of life changes really make the series better. And I'm glad that Sega's giving it the attention it deserves. What I don't like, though, is that I think they're releasing them a little too fast here. It would have been nice as a collection. But other than that, you know, it's really enjoyable. We have Shenmue coming out really, really soon. And yeah, getting my feet wet.
Isn't that Tuesday?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This is when everything releases.
Yeah, the next summer is almost over, so they're, you know, kicking our asses.
Yep. Yeah. Release all the things.
Yeah. So. Yeah, that's about it. What about you, Chris?
So I've been continuing to play more MLB The Show 18, mainly the Diamond Dynasty mode, which is a team management sim, basically at this point, because I am looking at all my programs, like the different missions they have tied to that stuff. I mean, even at the point where I'm using a fan-made site for tracking this stuff. You have to do it manually because it's so tedious to just look through everything on the programs because there's probably about 100 of them in there. And they all have different goals. There's a bunch that are just tied to each of the teams, sort of getting stats with players from those teams, that sort of stuff. And so they don't have a great system for letting you easily follow that stuff, which makes it hard to try to fill out the right lineups of players that I need to play with to complete these missions and get better players and packs and all that sort of stuff, all the same sort of stuff that happens with like Madden Ultimate Team and FIFA Ultimate Team and all that stuff. Mm. Though I think this fades into a thing I've had since I was a kid, which is collecting cards, baseball cards specifically. I have probably about 7,000 of them. Mm. Tons of like folders with those sort of or if it has like nine slots on them, you put your cards in there. If they're good ones, you can put them double-sided to have double them in there.
Yeah.
I got plastic tubs full of them.
Oof.
So that this very much is like a modern version of that, especially because a lot of the players, like the older classic players, actually have some of the like tops cards from those eras. All the stuff when I collected, which is like the early to late 90s. Mm. So there's some cards here. I'm pretty sure I have some of these, which is pretty neat. It would be really cool if they could expand it into like Donruss and some of those other types of cards. But yeah, I really like this part of the game. Mm. I just kind of wish they made it a lot easier to track all this stuff, hopefully for next year. I think that's something they should really focus on.
Yeah.
And the nice thing is on the MLB The Show site, you can tap into the community market where you can sell your cards. So I can sell my duplicates and such. And you can manage that stuff on the site, which makes it – you can also set like specific – save searches, so it's like, oh, I want to see all the cheap stuff. Mm. So I can see if people just decided to, you know, dump and run throw their stuff on there for much cheaper, and it's like, oh, I'm going to buy these cards, fill out my collection, that sort of stuff, which I've gotten some of those that way. But it should also have all the program stuff. I should probably post, take a screenshot of this site that I'm using for the program stuff, because I have to literally manually add this stuff and, you know, click on it to fill up these stats, all that sort of stuff, just to manually track it. It's like, this, I shouldn't have to do this, or, you know, find people that have put Google spreadsheets of all these programs, sort of the community has made, that sort of stuff. But, yeah, otherwise that's still a lot of fun to play when I do get the chance to play it. But it's not always as much as I would like. I've been continuing to play more WarioWare Gold, working on the touch games in that for the different challenges they have in there. I think I completed 9 Volts achievements in there, so I'm going to be moving on to the next ones. That game's still a lot of fun, still working towards getting all the unlocks, which there's still quite a bit to go. I've also been playing more Chasm. I managed to get a new ability, which is wall jumps, which controls a bit weird. It's not just, you know, like Mario style, where it's just jump as you hit the other hit the wall to jump across to the other side. Mm-hmm. You're gonna have to push up against the wall, so you have to hold like the D-pad in the direction you want to jump away from. So it takes a little bit getting used to, and often results in me trying to jump up onto it, not hitting the ledge, hitting just below it, and kind of going into this wall slide that it's waiting for me to, you know, wall jump off.
So then it's a guiding.
I'm still waiting on unlocking the double jump, because I think that will be the thing that helps out a lot. Assuming it's in there. I only have 4 of the 8 unlocks right now. About 10 hours in. It is a slow grind, like Symphony of the Night was. And playing Guacamelee alongside it really made me appreciate how quickly Guacamelee just gets you through that stuff.
That game just kind of throws you in and like.
It's like, all right, you got this. Okay, now we're going to show you another thing. Okay, and then here's the next thing. Mm. And then here's the next thing. It's like, all right, this is good. This is fun. And it adds to your arsenal of for combat that really helps make that a lot of fun to experiment with. And Chasm here, it doesn't really have anything like that. It just, it's too devoted to being just like Symphony of the Night.
Which, sort of to happens. Be fair, for some people is what kind of they want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but does this have on PS4 yet?
Yeah, PS4, Vita, Steam, and I think that's it for right now.
Okay, so I'm going to have to give that one a go.
Yeah, it definitely feels a lot like Symphony of the Night, with a little bit less of the bullshit, but still enough of it that I'm sitting here like, I kind of wish you had tightened up some of these things. They just put out a big update the other day. I got a chance to actually play it. One of the things they did is now enemies that are sort of on the edge of the screen, near the edge of the screen, activate when you hit them with range attacks. So otherwise, before, I was just sort of spamming them with my upgraded knife, which does where I throw 3 knives now, like a spread shot. Mm-hmm. I could just sit there and spam that, and they wouldn't move because they didn't activate.
Yeah.
So now they do start running, and the range on those knives also means that if I miss the guy I'm attacking and hit somebody further away, they will just start running over. And so it'll be like, I beat an enemy, and then another one's just running. I was like, where the hell are you come from? You're not supposed to be over here yet. It's like, oh, yeah, the knife probably hit him. I think they just increased drops, which I've definitely been seeing more for the gold drops. But, yeah, I'm also working towards getting some of the higher-end gear. I also got a better sword. It's like an energy sword, kind of. It's kind of goldish, but it's the swords, the short, long sword that are all just horizontal attacks. Mm-hmm. Whereas I still have my claymore that's just a big overhead attack.
Yeah,
that kind of does almost 3 directions worth of attacks. that is only like 2 damage less, so I'm just keeping that. So I can just better take out enemies in all directions. But yeah, that game's good. I think it's still has some work cut out for it, as far as updates to improve things. But otherwise, it's in a pretty good state, especially if you are one of the people that thinks Symphony of the Night's one of the best games ever. This might be up your alley. I just wish the platforming and combat was better. But it might, the platforming might get better as I get more unlocks, abilities. Because it's still kind of slow, but now I got that wall jump, I'm going through the places I was at before and sort of try to figure out where I haven't gone to and see if the wall jump is what I need to get through those. Which has for a couple things, but for the most part, I'm still working my way through it. I'm still trying to get some deer meat for one of the quests, which before I unlocked him, I ate a bunch of deer meat to beat a boss. So I was like, I hope that wasn't all of it. I hope it was just set to spawn like 4 of these that this guy needs. Cause, which is weird because it's not supposed to... stuff for the quest you don't usually have the ability to use, and this is just a piece of food. So it should just work like the other food that you can eat and refill your health. So I'm hoping that stuff just drops. I just have to figure out which enemies drop it. As I work my way through. But that's still been pretty good. And now I'm kind of at the point where I've got that Dead Cells, and I've got Guacamelee 2 coming out in 2 days. I got all the Metroid likes that I can play for now. So I think that's pretty much it. I bought Agents of Mayhem because it's on sale for really ridiculously cheap on PSN right now. $6 for the collection with all the DLC in it.
Yeah, that's an underrated game.
Yeah, it's basically at a price where it's like, oh fuck, it's too cheap not to buy it now. Even if I don't have the hard drive space for it yet. but I probably will, because I just downloaded Rainbow Six Siege for the free weekend. So I could play like 2 games and then delete it. As I make sure that I do not want it. So that's kind of been it. How about you, Lee?
Well, my big thing is I've been playing Dead Cells. I've probably put... So I played the game during early access and I liked it. And then I was like, you know, I know this is going to come out on Switch, so I'm just going to wait. And so then I got it on Switch and kind of just started over, and I probably put a good 30 or 40 hours into it. And the Dead Cells is really, really good in its gameplay loop where you're just like one more run. Yeah. But, And I know there's been like this just effusive praise laid on the game, and I think that's actually kind of unwarranted. The I'd say like the back 25% of the game has some serious problems that need to be addressed. The Switch also definitely has some frame rate issues. It doesn't have so much as like slowdown issues or anything else like that, is that it has frame skipping issues where it's almost like your guy will teleport forward. It looks like the game skips 10 to 20 frames every great once in a while. And in a game where you fuck up once and you can really get killed and, you know, erase all of your progress, that's a really big problem. And, you know, so they're saying that they're going to fix it. They're shooting for, I think, sometime at the end of the year. This is the earliest it would come out would be November. But like, and it won't just be when stuff's on the screen. It'll be like when you're like standing still and you'll just see the game hitch and you're like, what the fuck? And like on the earlier levels, it's not really that much of a big deal. Because the first 2 to 3 levels, the first 2 to 3 areas, are pretty straightforward. You're really just kind of moving left and right and occasionally up and down. But the later areas can get pretty vertical, and then there's other stuff like where there's one area where there's a light component to where if you don't keep moving forward and get to where these lit torch areas are, you basically kind of enveloped by this darkness that will kill you, which that, again, that's a huge problem because movement is so important in this game. If the game does hitch, then it can really screw you up. But to the original point that I was saying, I'd say the back 25% of that game has a real problem with balancing issues, particularly the last boss. There's a lot of hidden things going on, like with scaling. Like, no matter how insane your weapons get, you basically can't get a damage bonus of over like 75%. You can't get certain reduction damage. You can't get certain damage reduction bonuses. Those are capped. And so there's just a lot of stuff going on in the back end of that game that they don't really ever explain to you. And it can actually inadvertently really fuck up the way that you play. And you don't really start noticing that until you've really put some serious time into the back end of the game, which I have. And so that was one of the things, like, you know, seeing all these reviews and seeing that whole thing happen with that douche from IGN and how everybody has been like, you know, this game is incredible. It is. But I would argue that the first 50 to 75% of the game are incredible. The last portion of it really feels like it's something that was part of an early access game, and they really didn't polish. The last boss is insanely frustrating. And I know, and like you, Chris had mentioned, and I think Dan Reb did too, like this sort of like roguelike style thing seems to sort of be like the flavor of the week right now. And I actually think that again, for the beginning of Dead Cells, it works really well for the way the game is, because you do get that sense where you're like, damn, I died. Just one more game. But as you start really kind of ramping up, the amount of cells that you need to unlock stuff, and it just becomes an absurd grind.
It sounds like it's very much like Rogue Legacy, where when you start buying stuff there, it's all cheap, because once you start doing it, everything else starts getting more expensive, so you have to be very careful not to buy the bullshit.
Exactly.
And start unlocking classes and such where it's cheap. At a certain point, you're just doing runs just for the money.
Exactly, and that's really kind of what it ends up breaking down to. And there's problems with that, because some of the prices for some of the later stuff that you need to really get into things, number one, get absurd. But the other thing too is, one of the things they don't tell you when you start the game is you know, as you start unlocking weapons, like you can start out with a bow, some type of sword or melee weapon, and a shield, right? The thing that they don't tell you and would be much better to know if you did is that you shouldn't spend time unlocking shit that you don't think that you'll use. And the main reason for that is there's an unlock early in the game that says, it says something like get random shield or get random bow or get random melee weapon. And the thing is once you start unlocking those other melee weapons, that puts them in that random pool. So if you unlock something that you actually don't like, then you can start the run up and then be stuck with a fucking shitty weapon. And it's the same thing that'll appear in shops and everything else like that. So it can really kind of screw up the way that you're playing. So the bottom line for it, and like I said, I didn't see this in any of the reviews, which really, really bothered me. It really felt like a lot of people that were reviewing this game were just looking at the first three levels. The rest were just kind of like, oh, this is just great, and I'll just play these three levels over and over again for 45 hours and give this game a 9. I think it's really probably more like a solid 7 or 8. And if they fix the back end of the game, it'd be a high 9. But, you know, hopefully we'll see what they do. This is definitely a game that needs to be tuned. But, yeah, there's a lot of stuff they just don't tell you. So I do think it's worth buying. But if you don't really know what you're getting in for or what you're getting into, it can be a problem. And on top of that is the way the game begins and then the way that you play it after 5 or 10 hours are very different things. So that's been the big thing that's taken up my time. I've been slowly working my way through Battle for Azeroth, which is the new WoW expansion with my wife. I don't have much to report on that yet, except it's beautiful. The voice acting is great. The first opening area for the Alliance actually reminds me of – there was an old zone in WoW called Duskwood, which is really, like, creepy. Oh. And it reminds me of a mix between Duskwood and Crookback Bog from Witcher. Like, and I'm getting, like, serious Witcher vibes playing it. So, of course, I'm enjoying that because Witcher 3 is our Lord and Savior. And then just trying out the Hearthstone expansion. That's been the big thing. And doing a little bit of Forza Horizon 3, just doing the Forzathons, trying to get cars, because I, as excited as I am for Forza 4, I don't know what they're going to do really that different that's going to make it better than Forza 3.
Oh, but especially, the seasons change.
That doesn't matter to me. It really doesn't, because, oh, look, there's snow on the ground. Well, I have a Blizzard Mountain expansion in Forza 3, and nothing is going to compare to a fucking Hot Wheels track over the ocean. Like, I don't know what they're going to do.
It's like, oh, either the bodies of water are frozen or they're not frozen. It seems like the big change.
Yeah,
and I could see that being cool, like for races and having it throw something in there. But it almost feels like it's not so much a thing for the players as it is for the developers to go, "Hey, we can make this track do something different, and it'll be exciting. Yeah. And then we won't have to do two tracks."
Yeah, because it seems like it'll just change the seasons based on what the race needs.
Mm. Right, and so, I'm from Georgia. We don't have seasons here. It's hot as fuck all the time, or it's snowing. So
yeah,
well, it's the same up here. It's just we have to worry about frozen roads, whether we can get to work or not, and then just melting with all the humidity. Just probably the same down there, but a little bit less of at least the cold part.
Yeah, it's just funny thinking about Forza 4 or Forza Horizon 4 because I'm kind of just like, what could they really do? Like, Forza Horizon 3 is a 10 for me. Like, the game is insane. So it's just like, do I really need to play the new one?
Yeah, the setting doesn't do it too much of a benefit because it's just, oh, it's here in the UK.
Yeah, like, oh, that's
kind of looks the same as, like, 2 and 1.
Yeah.
Or just forested areas and such. It's just like, okay, you'll see, like, pubs and British people driving on the wrong side.
Yeah, exactly. I probably hear somebody yell bollocks every once in a while.
Hey, that's me.
You'll want to wreck into their shit all the time and just bust up their fences and shit. Just like, fuck you, Brexit assholes.
And you know, don't call me a Yank.
Yeah. So. It's like, Australia felt bad for those people because it's like, it's a beautiful place. And you're just causing the government billions of dollars in damage.
Yeah.
Having to rebuild their fences and shit.
Yeah, fuck your guardrail.
Because Britain's like, fuck you, Theresa May.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's it. That's all I've been doing.
All right.
All right. So, yeah. So we'll get into our news stories for the week, I guess. We'll start off with Season 2 of Tekken 7 has been announced.
Yes, it was announced at Evo. We have a little more information on it now that the main patch is going to be released on September 6th, along with Anna Williams and Lei Wu Long. The characters will be available piecemeal at $4.99 a piece, or you can drop $26 for the season pass. And it's going to be a pretty expansive patch with a few system changes and the usual bunch of balancing that you see, you know, in a transition like this. And so Tekken 7 about to undergo some pretty major changes. Hopefully we'll get some news on those three mystery characters sooner than later as well.
Yeah.
Is there anything you'd like to see for the three?
Marduk.
Okay. Arctic, all right.
No hesitation.
Any of the gimmick characters, the animals?
No.
No? No Gon?
I'm not a fan of...
What about the doctor?
No.
Not if you're paying money for him.
No.
Is he in there?
I also think that's the same... Yeah.
Okay.
I also think that's the same reason that we haven't seen Dan in Street Fighter V is because you can't justify charging money for what amounts to a joke character.
Yeah, it's true.
So
yeah, they should just, if they're gonna add him, they should just add him as just as a free add-on.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Or make it like a dollar.
No,
it's not worth it.
Okay,
no.
Mm-hmm.
No. It should be one of those things where they credit your PSN account a buck.
Yeah,
for downloading him.
Okay, I was thinking like, oh, everybody's five, but Dan's a dollar. He's not really worth it.
Yeah, I guess that could go. That could work too, I suppose. So that's coming out very shortly. So we also got news about DOA 6. We got Lei Fang and Hitomi revealed early. Yep.
They were teased right after Evo, like right after.
Yeah.
Team Ninja was on their social media account and posted the silhouettes, but they were supposed to be revealed at Gamescom, but drip drip.
Yep, that didn't happen.
We have the preliminary information already, and pretty consistent redesigns based on what we've seen already. They really didn't have much they needed to change for Hitomi, but Lei Fang has a pretty cool look, I would say.
Yep.
And we don't have any video yet. We're probably going to get that at Gamescom. but I would expect them to be pretty standard intact characters going from 5 to 6. And I'm kind of looking forward to seeing how they adapt the new systems.
Yeah, because, you know, Hitomi is one who could really exploit that new system.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
So, yeah, it's going to be fun to see what those trailers contain, because probably be some pretty interesting ideas in there.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to Gamescom now. Not that I wasn't before, but...
All right, so we're about to get into our big serious topic of the week, that being Ninja and his response to his... stance on streaming with women. To do that, though, I figured we'd get some guests on. We've had this plan for a long time. Actually, John is going on probably the longest turnaround from actual request to getting him on the show, which is amazing. I'm not complaining in any way, John, because you know, I'm super stoked that you were able to make it today.
Well, thanks.
So, yeah, John, we're like to introduce you to John from John's Arcade, John Jacobson, and, of course,
hey,
Michelle from John and Michelle and The Michelle Show and Video Game Outsiders.
Yeah,
and...
we're both from Video Game Outsiders
Podcast. Yeah, we're both Video Game Outsiders. That's probably where we're most well-known.
Yeah. What's up? Video Game Outsiders. And I think you do approximately, like, 42 other podcasts and live streams during the week. So
we do.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, so let's get into it. I'm sure this is a story that you guys have been following.
Yes, it's something that people have tweeted me a lot and wanted my opinion on because I guess they already know it, but we'll see. We'll get into it. I'm curious what you guys all think.
All right. He is of the opinion that he's not streaming with women because basically he doesn't want to deal with internet drama and the rumors that perhaps that would bring to him. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting stance. I mean, he recently made a statement about it, and
Is this the Mike Pence stance too? Isn't it?
Fair, I think it's sort of been blown out of proportion.
I think it's a non-news story personally. I think it's stupid.
Isn't
honestly.
He married? I think that's between him and his wife. What they decide is most comfortable for their relationship. I mean, I've been in relationships before where I've had no issue if I said to a guy or he said to a guy, you know what, I prefer if we don't go out alone with other people. That's like a personal relationship thing. So I don't think it's really any of our business.
Yeah. Well, I think the way that it was being framed was that the idea was that he didn't want to stream with women because he didn't want to deal with the backlash from the fact that, you know, for the most part, a large chunk of the video game community are toxic douchebags.
Well, maybe he doesn't want to say my wife. Maybe he's trying to protect his family and his wife. And maybe we don't know what's going on. It could, you know, and I think that people are saying, oh, it's sexism and they want to jump on top of it. I think that people are just desperate for stories and outrage machines.
I agree.
And they need to just
it's a story at all. I mean, why are you guys talking about
this? Other people's relationships. Relationships are none of our business, and what they want to do and who they want to stream with are none of our business. I'm more concerned with who I'm streaming with, not a stranger.
Yeah, I think the reason that this even came up as an issue is number one because of who he is, and I think that there's this implied idea behind what he's trying to say where it's somehow like misogynistic, and it's not. And I'm saying that as
a who is he though? He's just some guy.
He's not some guy. He's the
playing
biggest,
Fortnite.
He's
the biggest Fortnite player in the world. My 13-year-old. Well, let me tell you, my 13-year-old and all of his friends know who this guy is. I didn't know who he was until
I know he is. I also know who Mr. T is. I don't care.
Oh, if Mr. T started streaming, I would get into that right away.
I don't see why it's a big deal. I mean, obviously, there's something going on with his relationship. He just doesn't want to put himself in a weird position, right? Is that he's doing?
No, but the reason he's doing it is because he doesn't want his wife and his kid to get attacked by these internet trolls who could find out, dox him, and do all kinds of stuff. But instead of people taking it that as him going, I don't want my family to be possible.
I don't see how the two are connected.
We don't know that that's the case. We know what his statement is, but I think there's no real proof of that because they could already do that now if they don't like him.
What's
people
the connection
already
between
that?
Streaming with a girl and his family getting doxed?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I don't see the
connection.
That's
a jump in logic that a lot of people are making. I don't think it's particularly a valid one. To me, you know, this story is it's max of inexperience. He's a young guy. He's well aware of what the internet has a tendency to do. But and then he releases a statement that is guaranteed to inflame that exact behavior. Yeah. So it might have just been better if he didn't say anything.
Exactly.
Well, wait, how did he, by the way, I don't know how this happened. How did he say, I know I'm aware of the story, but I don't know how he delivered his message. Was it just on stream? Was it an interview? What was it? How did he deliver this message that he didn't
want? It was a tweet.
That's all it was?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What, where did that come from though? Why did he tweet that?
Because people are asking him why he wouldn't stream with a woman. And he's done these things like, I guess,
and he said that?
Yeah, he said he didn't want to do it because he was I think it was something like he was uncomfortable with the idea and he didn't want to put his did not want to get his family involved. And all the stuff that I've read after the fact, and then he had like a rebuttal statement afterwards when people kind of went after him because they tried to say that it was him being misogynistic. It appeared like it was more like a safety issue. And so I feel like that what's happening is there people are trying to conflate two different things where they're trying to take something and say it's misogynistic when it's really a person that's, it sounds like, is trying to look out for what they do and then the well-being of their family. And then people are also conflating that with him saying, well, if you have a person like that saying he doesn't want to stream with women, then what does that mean about the place of women in gaming? And I don't think you can conflate those two things. I think those are two worthwhile conversations, but I don't think they're intersecting here the way that everybody is making.
Well, it is drawing attention to an actual problem that's going on, that if people want to create drama all the time, and especially women and, you know, things that happen online, like people are frightened. People are legit frightened to maybe, I know even guys at work, like say to a girl, you look nice today, or can we go on a date? And if the same thing happens online, I think a lot of men are kind of concerned, right? So maybe he's worried that he doesn't want to be put in that position. That could very well be true. I personally don't think he should have commented or tweeted or said anything.
He should have just
ignored it. But, you know, I don't agree that he's doing it because he's trying to protect them in a certain way. I think he probably does it because he's not comfortable with it, because he's a married man and he doesn't feel it's appropriate. And so then I don't really care. Like, it's none of my business what he wants to do. If he came out and said, you know, all women who play games are whores and I'm not going to play with them and I think we should avoid them, then I'd say it's a topic. But, you know, it's some guy who doesn't feel comfortable doing it. And I don't understand why people are trying to call everybody sexist just because the way they live their life is not the same as yours.
Well, if there's one thing we've all learned, it's that the gaming community feeds off drama.
Right. Well, every community.
Well, you guys are doing it right now.
Well, we have no choice.
You're feeding the drama right now.
We're trying to analyze the drama and figure out why it's happening. It's you know,
there's nothing wrong with discussion.
Well, no, I was gonna say I'd be honest with you, man. I don't think that's remotely fair at all. Because like I'm someone who's been involved in the fighting game community for the last 20 years. I've had people show up at tournaments to try and shoot me because of things that I've said, and so because of that, I've been very careful about involving my wife and my child in something like that because I don't want them to get hurt. And that's something that should not be around video
but
games.
Isn't she already involved? Doesn't she tweet for him and do a bunch of stuff? She's already public.
I'm talking about me.
Right. I'm just saying she's already involved. If he was that protective of his family, he shouldn't have involved them or mentioned them at all. They shouldn't be online. You know, John doesn't have his family on our show, doesn't talk about them. They aren't tweeting for him. They aren't running our, you know. So I'm saying that excuse for him might not work. I think his family's already involved. If he was that concerned, he probably wouldn't have done 500 other things. But I think that, you know, it's his own personal choice, and maybe, you know, we should respect that. That's all. Not saying you guys, I'm saying just the community should respect people's own personal choices.
Yeah, I could totally see that.
Totally
understand. Yeah, I can definitely see it being just a case of people seeing it as a missed opportunity for the biggest streamer in the world to potentially bring some of the best women streamers into his fans' orbit of places they might also want to follow. And check out their streams.
To give more exposure, perhaps.
Yeah, that's the case I've heard.
He already does that, though. He jumps on other people's streams and will get them, like, a shit ton of views. So I think it's really just people expecting him to be an avatar.
That's up to him, though. He could do anything he wants. He earned whatever audience he has, he earned it. And he could do whatever he wants with it. Right? He doesn't owe anyone anything. Oh, now I have to.
You don't have to make sure the group is diverse on who you choose to stream with. Like, that shouldn't be a conscious decision. Like, you know, if you like somebody and think they're funny, I'm sure he's not even thinking about that, you know, consciously, like promoting people. Maybe playing with them is another thing. That could be a personal choice. But I think I'm with you, John, that finally we agree on something, that I just feel like, you know, he doesn't owe the community anything.
Fair enough. Yeah. It's just an interesting point of conversation.
I feel it.
Yeah.
Well, apparently not to John. He's angry.
Yeah, well, this is...
Well,
this
John,
is
you've been outvoted, so...
This is the first time I've ever been in a live conversation with John, so I'm not entirely familiar with, you know, how he works. So.
Oh, you've listened to the show. You should know.
Yeah, well, he jumps in. Yeah, I won't bring up Ready Player One.
Please don't. That's going to be 2 hours in the lecture.
So yeah, I will, however, bring up Philip Mewson and the continuing developments of that story. And
oh God,
do you feel bad about this, Phil, having a similar first name to him?
Yeah.
It's like he's ruined.
I was going to ask you that.
I think he plagiarized my name.
Well, people just gonna be like, oh, Art, are you like that Philip?
Oh, is this the guy that did the Dead Cell review?
Yeah.
Among others.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, IGN is scrubbing him off the site.
But yeah.
Because there's so much that they don't have the ability to pick and choose which to get rid of.
Yeah. Yeah. The IGN is no longer sure anymore. And we have several examples of the Metroid Samus Returns review was one of the latest.
Mm-hmm.
Grand Theft Auto review. That one in particular struck me as one of those things where had he even played the game? Because, Chris, you remember what the control is for precision aiming in Samus Returns?
Yeah, the shoulder buttons. Because my 3DS was partially broken. So
yeah.
Then we had a lot of ways to play.
Yeah. So, yeah, he got that wrong because he said the control was the R and it's actually L. So he actually copied the error in Engadget's review.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah.
Oh, no shit. So, okay, that's... I didn't know about that. This is another news story, by the way. I'm kind of over.
Somebody
but,
who got the answer wrong on
a
test.
I love that tactic. Yeah. Of you fucked up in your writing and somebody stole that and it's in there and you're like, oh, I know that's mine.
It's like when IGN took the or when Nintendo snagged that IGN Okami artwork and then left the watermark in it for the Wii version of Okami.
Yeah. So I guess that basically what it boils down to with Philip Mewson is he had an opportunity for a dream job. He got that job. And then couldn't be bothered to put in the effort to actually play the games.
What do you think it was with that guy?
I thought you were going to jump in, John, and say dream job. They're paying the guy like $50 per article.
Okay, you want me to do that? Okay.
Yeah,
this fucking guy sitting in the Panera Bread every day. Yeah, I don't think it's a fucking dream job. He's getting like $20 an article.
Yeah, that's right. He's not even playing these games. No, I think that it comes down to the fact, like we were saying, he's not admitting any wrongdoing. And like he had an opportunity to come clean and be like, you know what? I need to reevaluate how I do these reviews. Maybe I could do better. You know, I do watch videos and
maybe the guy just can't write. Maybe he just maybe it was his dream job and he realized he was over his head and started just copying people. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's possible. I mean, all of the justifications that he's given, and then he still, you know, has started doing DMCA takedown notices on his non-apology video. It's
the best part of it was that he told people, he's like, you can keep looking for stuff, you're not going to find anything.
and then
oh, for real?
Hey, you don't tell Jason Schreier, oh, just keep looking, you're not going to find it.
Yeah.
He will look.
He'll spend days looking at it.
Is that Kotaku guy?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and as somebody that does reviews, a lot of people think writing a review is actually easy. It really isn't.
No.
You know, it's especially if you have to have opinions. That's one thing. That's what a review is. But being able to coherently articulate those opinions and get them out into something that people are going to understand and then be able to relate to. It's a very difficult thing to do. And as you can clearly tell in my inability to actually say sentences properly, this is something I have problems with.
Well, it's like any writing in general. I mean, and to be able to do it with a video game it's like you said, it's a hard audience because you want to make sure it's especially captivating and fun and interesting. You know, it's not like you're reading a research paper. But I feel like it's lazy the way he just stole those entire statements and sentences. Like he could have still watched a video and been influenced and not played the game and come up with his own kind of creative, like we all used to do in high school, right? Like, sure, teacher, wink. I read that book. You know, I was always able to get all A's by bullshitting my way through life. And it's like you have to to be smart about it. So I think he's not only
maybe that, like, was this guy's problem. He was trying to treat it like a book report.
He's also not very bright because he's doing it so blatantly, and to have the audacity to come out there and be so bold and like call people like, "Hey, come on, find more." You're like, what is he doing? He's begging for destruction.
Yeah. Like, you're already fucked up getting caught the one time. Don't say there's no more evidence, guys.
Yeah. I promise.
I didn't steal anything from Wikipedia.
He seems a little unstable.
Doesn't it just kind of highlight, though, that a lot of these gaming sites are just bullshit, though? I mean,
we know that.
I think a lot of it
comes down to is the fact that go way back to GameSpot and the Kane and Lynch thing that Jeff Gerstmann was fired over.
Yeah.
And that was a huge issue. It was basically I barely remember the entire gaming media. Well, basically, marketing went behind editorial's back and sold Eidos a good review of Kane and Lynch.
This goes back even further than that. Remember the Driver 3 fiasco?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That pretty much ended, like, two major gaming publications, like, simultaneously.
Right. And
the point I was going to make, though, it seems like the pressure to review every fucking game basically makes these sites have no soul, I think, and they're just farming out all these fucking reviews to anybody and not really checking them at all. And
they don't really have a staff. A lot of it seems freelancy too.
Matt Bradford on Video Game Outsiders, he was a freelancer that wrote for Games Radar, and I guarantee you, he never met any of the principals of that company or went to an office or anything. You know, he's just writing reviews in a spare bedroom and sending it in, and they just publish it willy-nilly.
And it's all about how many clicks you're getting. So then it becomes a clickbait article and a headline, and you define the drama. And that actually, because the media is dying and it's so pathetic, they're actually, looking for outrage stories. So they're looking for things that are outrageous. That's what drives Kotaku and Polygon in general. It's not actual gaming content. It's what's wrong, what's politically incorrect about this gaming content, or what outrage can we stir up? What's the drama? What happened here? What's the story with Ninja? What's the story with that? It's like, it's become less about gaming and more about just trying to get clicks. And I think that's why people are getting kind of fed up with it. And we find, like, a lot of our listeners are saying that they're turning to podcasts because it's like one of the only places you can get actual gaming talk.
Right. Yeah. Or just from the community. Go to Reddit read Steam reviews or whatever,
Yes.
Yeah.
I wanted to get at was that there were all these black eyes that the gaming media as a whole have piled up over
a matter of years,
and they've never really gotten together and just kind of come to terms with it or sorted out any sort of resolution. They just tried to move on from it without any change or any acknowledgement. And so when you pile up that much of a credibility problem, it becomes very hard from any corner of it to take it seriously at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think too with the whole thing with reviews, I just think you have a group of people that care about reviews, but this is anecdotal for me, but I don't give a shit. Like, I stopped caring a lot of the times when particularly with the Kane and Lynch fiasco, where it's like, somebody's obviously getting paid off for some of this stuff. And then it's just a reason why I stopped writing reviews. I feel like I don't have anything interesting to say about it. I'm more in, guys, the graphics on this are super smooth. And like, before you guys joined the show, we were talking about Dead Cells. And the thing that was crazy to me about all the Dead Cells reviews were that nobody seemed to talk about any of the structural problems the game actually has on the back half of it. And so it was kind of like, did these guys just play this game, like the first two levels, over and over and over again? They're like, this is great. And I think to your point earlier, it does seem like it's sort of a grind for these guys. They're just getting all these freelancers because they got to get the clicks and they got to do all of that. And right. I don't know that there's so much of, I don't want to say integrity, but there's not a lot of thought, I think, put into, like, are we actually giving like a thoughtful critique of this game compared to, we just need to get people to look at this because nobody's going to be happy with what we do anyway. You know, there's always going to be somebody that's like, oh my God, you gave this game an 8, fuck you. And, that's the same reason reviews don't interest me anymore anyway. So I think there's partially that going on as well. But as far as plagiarism goes, I don't know if you guys know who Dave Halverson is. He used to do Game Fan, Gamers Republic, and all that shit. He ripped off a couple of my reviews. So So I, back when I worked at Pop Culture Shock, so like those, there's definitely, I think, for that sort of old boys club for game reviewers, I think they all did this shit. And I think that's part of the reason why you've seen such a reaction about what this guy did, because it's like, oh shit, they caught us.
Yeah.
What is it? Was kind of
at Home Depot. What's going on?
Is that a shop bell? Where are you?
Oh, that is my cockatoo.
Yeah.
What?
He's sitting on a sports.
A bird banging on a bell.
Yeah. He has a little a cage that we made out of a shower booth.
Hmm.
And he's got a little bell that he's playing with.
Oh, you're one of those neighbors. Okay. Got it.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was actually why I stopped writing reviews in the first place, is because I saw no more point to it.
Yeah, it's I mean, I still do it, but I'm not as frequent as I used to anymore. Now it's if I do a review, I'm actually one of the people who actually does reviews in first person now. It's like, yeah, if you're looking at this, you want to know what I think. Why don't I actually tell you what I think?
Be personable about it. Be yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
I used to be that way, and then for a while I wasn't in a position where I was really allowed to, and I think that kind of ruined me as a writer.
Yeah.
If I'm completely honest about it. And
well, I think podcasts are the future.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They totally are. So. So let's actually get in. Instead of drama, let's actually go into some gaming content of the week. Because, I didn't bring you guys on here just so we could.
Yeah, this is a real fucking downer, this goddamn show.
Well, we have drama on our show, but it's more between John and I, personally.
Yeah.
This is a nice change.
This next story might not help you guys, help your mood out too much either.
Okay.
It's so if Forza Horizon 2 is going to be delisted from the Xbox Live Marketplace at the end of September. I mention this because this game is only like 3 years old.
Didn't they just? They're giving it away right now too.
Yeah, they're giving it away with Games with Gold, and immediately after that, pulling it.
Yeah, along with all the DLC too.
Yeah.
Strange.
It's like
that's really?
Yeah, it has. From what I understand, it has to do with the music license runs out.
And that's typically what is behind all this shit, you know? Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I mean, honestly, I don't blame them. I mean, why pay publishing, you know, whatever some record label on a game that's technically dead, right? So they're probably saying, okay, we'll give it away to everybody right now, and then the license expires, and then it's dead. I think what they do is actually cool. They gave it the month. Let's just give it away right now. Last chance.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, they did the same thing with Forza.
They did that with Forza 5, didn't they?
Yeah, and Forza Horizon, too.
What that's going to mean is we're going to have less actual real music in games, I think, if this becomes...
Right. Well, Michelle, you know, like I was stream... I played Crazy Taxi on the PC.
Yeah.
And the original Crazy Taxi had that Offspring soundtrack.
Yes. Yeah. It's gone, right?
It's gone on the PC one. So... Yeah. So clearly, you know, the music rights is a pain in the ass long term.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they don't just re-release Forza Horizon 2 without the soundtrack. Just tell you, you know, pull up Spotify.
That's the thing that makes me wonder, like, why couldn't they just do it this way and just be like,
repackage it as a special edition?
Yeah, this is the streaming edition of the game, and you can play whatever music you want.
I mean, honestly, when games have licensed music or popular music from a record label, it's actually a pain in the ass for streaming too. Yeah. Like you said. Yeah.
Like, I want to say Forza Horizon 3 had the whole streaming station in it.
It did.
That if you signed up for the Microsoft streaming music service,
Groove Music,
you could stream it into the game, but then they shut it down like 6 months later.
I think the future is doing a Spotify link-in or something. Like you guys are saying, like, bring your own music, here, log in, we're now linked with it.
That's exactly what they should do.
You can do that on the consoles themselves now. So that
But sometimes, though, the game needs the music for the vision, you know, like a Tony Hawk game.
Sure,
you know,
but come up with your own original music like Blizzard does with World of Warcraft or something. I'm playing right now, I know you are, and that music is going to pull you into the game. It's not my Spotify playlist. It's just lazy, you know, I think, if you're pulling hits, and then so I don't think it's good anymore. I think we've grown beyond that.
I don't think it's good either. And I remember like a long time ago, like when a real song was in a game, I was like, holy fuck, that's in this game, you know?
Guitar Hero, that's where it belongs.
Or whatever, yes.
Journey.
So, yeah, very little pony up for better licenses.
But now it's streaming. Yeah.
That's true. Or a lifetime license or something. I don't want it to have to make the game go away. I think that
they had that problem with Grand Theft Auto with Vice City. Like, I think Vice City is really, really defined by its soundtrack because of its because of where they placed it, you know, chronologically and the setting and everything. And so then all of a sudden, like, look, I want to murder people to Flock of Seagulls. You can't take that away.
Yes. That's wrong. True. It was there.
So, but I want to go back to something though. I'm so happy that there's somebody else on this podcast that plays WoW, because I always feel like none of these guys play it. I'm the only one. So hearing that you do is, I'm actually, I just, before we jumped on the podcast, I was playing it with my wife. So I agree with you. The music in the new expansion is awesome.
Yes, I like it. And John, he's playing a little bit too. And we've been kind of talking about it. We've been doing like a Warcraft Outsiders, one of our many bonus episodes that we do on our show. And we used to do that a long time ago, but I've been playing for over a decade, and I have some items in game: Shelly's Staff of Dark Mending and Shelly's Sterilized Scalpel.
Nice. So if you
see them, shout out.
All right. Yeah.
You guys don't play WoW, like, huh?
No, I mean, I know what WoW is. I don't play it. I can't afford it.
Yeah, they should make it free to play at this point.
Yeah, I think it's free up to level 20.
Yeah.
So you do all the boring stuff, and then you have to pay up.
Exactly.
Yeah. Welcome to the era of live services where stuff just goes away just because they don't feel like paying licenses.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I don't blame them though. Why would you renew that license on a game that's that old?
I don't blame them either, but it, you know, I imagine if that was the case with something like, you know, Final Fantasy VII or something like Super Mario World.
Well, you know what this really illustrates the problem with digital, right? Because If Forza 2 was physical, they wouldn't be pulling all the games off the used shelf at GameStop, right?
Right, right.
If it was physical only.
Well, they could shut down the servers and lock your account out or whatever. Like, the multiplayer could go away. There's other things that could happen. I don't think we can blame it on digital. I think we blame it on the fact that when a game's not popular, they're not going to pay the license. No, I think we can, actually,
because digital kind of holds Microsoft's foot to the fire and says, you need to renew this because you're still selling the game.
Yeah, I would actually agree with that, because you could turn around today and go, well, I don't know, I think it's sort of split too. I think there should be some sort of option to have a license in perpetuity, simply because of what was mentioned earlier. Like, what about the vision of the game and all that? Because I keep going back to thinking about Grand Theft Auto with Vice City.
Or even Tony Hawk. I mean, specific song selection for Tony Hawk that probably the average person couldn't put together to get the vibe.
But with how popular gaming is now and with streaming now, we're in a different world and a different time. And I think that's the sad reality. I agree with you about Tony Hawk. I agree with you about Grand Theft Auto. I don't think we're in that position anymore where we have people hungry for cash and it's a big market. And so we have to think differently.
Yeah. Well, I wonder then how that manifests itself, though, because if we're talking about, because the real reason this is happening is because the recording industry in a lot of ways is still really backwards as far as this licensing. But at the same time, it's not unfair to ask, if you're using our song and you're making millions off the game, you should totally throw us a bone.
That's all that's happening here. The thing is, they inked a deal with the record label probably for 3 years or whatever it is, a set amount of time. And then that contract expired. That's really all that happened here. And so they're saying,
but
renew
that's poor planning. When it expired, they should have then pumped in their own music.
They've moved on from Horizon 2, though. They've moved on from that.
But it also becomes a matter of a return on investment. Like, if they try to keep the license going, like, how much are they realistically making, and then how much are they actually losing by trying to get the license going again? And then that's where the physical part comes in. Like, if I have a physical copy of this game, you're not taking away songs from me.
Right.
But if you're trying, if I'm 5 years in the future, I do want to play Forza Horizon 2 and I can't find a copy of it, then what are my options? Especially now that we have, so much of every storefront has a huge digital component where you should be able to continue to get games even if you can't find them physically, then that also creates the kind of problem. Because in a way, these music licenses are creating an artificial shelf life for their own products, which this industry more and more keeps saying it needs to move to things that are long tail, and they're cutting the tail off perpetually just by having that license track. But then it goes back to what you guys were mentioning before. If that's the vision of the game, you're trying to hit that vibe. I mean, I think there's a lot of different things going on. Like, you guys, we keep going back to Grand Theft Auto, but in Grand Theft Auto 5, they had a song by Chain Gang of 1974. No one has ever heard of that band, but they basically became the theme song for Grand Theft Auto 5. I'm sure that band would have no problem giving the rights to their song
exactly
forever. But then you have these other bands, like, say, Offspring or somebody else like that, that are kind of like, wait, Sega wants to do what now? Fuck them. They need to pass.
Find unsigned bands. Isn't that what that game is doing? Yeah. What is that called? Yeah. The new game that's coming out? They were out on E3 talking about it. Like, hey, come submit your art. Come submit your music. We actually submitted one of our songs, Beyond John. Good and Evil. Yeah, Beyond Good and Evil is doing that. They're sort of using the community as that because they know there's no issue.
Yeah.
You can't really blame the licensing deal they want.
No.
You can't blame the bands though. It's the record labels.
Yeah. It's the labels that do not know how to do business in this digital age. Because
I really disagree with what you're saying though, because it is a contract with a set time frame. That's all that happened here. That's it.
Yeah, but the whole thing is that
Microsoft chose not to renew the contract.
Yeah. But also the terms at a certain point
Forza
are not
Horizon
paid for
4,
games it, that are
Why would Microsoft keep in for Forza Horizon 4 is coming out? It's like especially with this game, it's like you guys complaining.
Poor planning
that
with Microsoft, then go and then do a quick hot patch update.
Why doesn't Microsoft just buy a fucking record label? Everybody's buying everybody else now.
Right.
They should just buy a record label with artists that they like and they won't
have
this.
But with Forza, I mean, it's almost like a Madden type deal. Do you really want to go back to Horizon 2? Does it really matter?
Actually, it would because
John, you have arcades in your basement. Come on,
no, but I'm saying it's more like a sports game. They're like Madden. I'm saying so. If they stopped selling Madden 2014, would you care?
No, not really.
No, but I disagree. Actually, I think the games. Right. I think the Horizon games are actually starkly different compared
to. Yeah, they're very singularly relevant.
Yeah, and it sets the precedence that this is okay. It doesn't matter if this particular game doesn't interest you to go back to. What about the next one or the next one? I think that it's a bad practice, personally.
Yeah. You know, to be fair to Microsoft, even though they are delisting it from the store and not selling it anymore, anybody who has purchased it still has it.
Yep.
So,
right,
yeah.
And they're giving it away for free right now.
With Games with Gold, yeah. So you can now have it and pay for the DLC if you
and
want
I grabbed
to.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but in this age of games lasting, you know, 10 years, the publisher should be better at getting music deals that last at least that long.
Yeah, that's something else too, because like I don't know how many of you guys have I still play Forza Horizon 3. They have a weekly thing. They're basically like kind of like WoW's weekly quests, and so they have hooks there to keep bringing people back. You know, whether it's new cars, you can win money, you can do, you know, that kind of stuff. So, yeah, especially in this age where they're starting to really design games. It seems like every game these days is designed to be the only thing that you play. So if they're going to keep doing that, then that's something they definitely need to go back and take a look at these contracts and go, what kind of shelf life do we expect for this?
Yeah,
do we expect
don't you think
play this in 5 years?
Don't you think that's going to die down because Horizon 4 is about to come out?
Yeah. A little bit.
Yeah.
I don't know, but we were just talking about that before you guys jumped on the call. Like, I don't know how 4 is going to beat 3. 3, in my opinion, is perfect. The fact that I can race in the snow and then race on a Hot Wheels track and a fucking Lamborghini, like, that's everything I wanted when I was 10 years old. So.
True that. So. All right, so let's. There's rumors here of a new Elite controller that you can pay $150 for, but does anybody really care?
I've considered getting this. I just don't use controllers that much anymore. But I know, John, you considered this as well. I do like the customization that they have, but I don't think I'm going to do it this time either. I don't use the controller as much.
Yeah, premium controllers are a very niche market, to say the least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you're a professional gamer, then yeah, I can see why you'd want to have something with a bit more customization. Something with a solid D-pad would be nice too.
But everyone says that the Elite controller is badass.
It is.
I have three of them, but they definitely have some quality controllers.
I was just saying, like, I think we're entering a different age now, where what console gamers care about has grown. I mean, we're entering the age where they actually care about frame rate and HDR and 4K and all that. So I don't think that, even though it's a smaller market, I think there is an interest for these premium products with console. You know, we're constantly get our listeners say, hey, I don't know if I can build a PC, but I do want to do something for my console. What can I do? What can I buy? Can I set up something fun? And I feel like it's appealing to those people that want to be, you know, more than just the average casual gamer, like the hardcore gamers. And I think that it's going to get more and more popular. The price should come down a little bit, though.
Well, that controller is really expensive. But like I said, people say that controller is fucking awesome.
Yes. So,
it is. Yeah, like I said, I got three of them. I got one for my PC.
Oh, and you do?
Two, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I have one for my PC.
So are you using
Steam games?
Do you use the paddles on the bottom and launch it?
I do.
Do you use the paddles? Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, the paddles especially are great for racing games, because they map to your face buttons. So, like, the way I've seen people mainly use them is with racing and then with FPSs. So, like, if you're constantly aiming, like, because if I'm going to play an FPS, I'd rather play the mouse. But I've seen a lot of console gamers that are like, well, this way I can keep my finger on the right stick and I can use my middle finger and my ring fingers to hit the paddles on the back so I can continue and tweak my aim and do stuff and throw grenades and all of that stuff. So I think it's pretty useful for a lot of people if they actually use it for that way. I use it for shifters in racing games.
Yeah.
You know, for the same reason. So it's, and it, the build, like I said, I know they've had issues with apparently like the triggers and stuff coming off and all of that, but the build quality on mine is fine. It's heavier. And it just feels premium. I mean, we ended up, I originally bought two, we got a third one for free, but you know, me and my son play with the other two on our Xbox and, I can't go back to the regular controller, not just because of the paddles, but just because of the way the thing is built.
Now see, I mean, Xbox One X should have come with these though. I think that you present a more premium product when you're giving somebody that higher price. John, I know you got the Scorpio edition and you were sort of taken back by the fact that there was nothing really special about it other than
it's pretty lame.
It, right. It should have come I think people are eager for these premium products. It would have sold a lot of Xboxes.
And I think it would have been able to justify the $500 price because I think a month after that you were seeing, you know, with discounts and stuff, people were able to get it for $400. And just having a essentially like a screen print on the console that makes it kind of shift to white didn't really, like, cause I have the Scorpio edition too, and I don't even use the Project Scorpio controller that came with it because it feels like a cheap piece of shit compared to my Elite.
Right.
So. Yeah.
And the thing is, you look at the controller, you can't even tell what's special about it. I see that little green text. Oh, it's the Scorpio one. Yeah. It's so lame.
Yeah, like, what am I going to do with that in like 5 years? So
I actually like the Xbox One controller.
I do too. I like it a lot more than PS4. I think it's better than 360 controller too.
It's like way better for like first person shooters too, like Call of Duty and shit.
Yeah, I use it for all of my, like I said, I have it hooked up to my PC. So anything that I play on PC that I can use a controller with, I use that. And I much prefer it just over the stock because it just feels better. So.
Either of you going to be picking one up?
I might.
Yeah.
I don't think I will, just because like I said, I'm mostly a PC gamer. I don't play the racers anymore. So if I did, though, I would, because everybody who has one loves it. I mean, yourself included. But so, John, I think you should do it first and let me know.
Yeah.
I'm sure I'll be the first idiot that buys one, and I'll be happy to let you guys.
Yeah, please do.
I have more money than time and sense. So
yeah. So I have too much stuff. I just have too much stuff. I mean, I have five controllers next to me. You know, it's not even the price. It's just the fact that I don't want another one. I don't want any more shit in my house.
Yeah, I've kind of sat around and thought about that too. Like, why the fuck do I have three of these exactly?
Yeah, that's a lot.
Well, we like I said, we did get one of them for free because there was like Amazon lost the package and then it showed up and they told us to keep it. So I just thought, I got one for me and one for my son. But then we have an Xbox upstairs for my kid when he wants to play Minecraft. So like, I've probably got like
got some spoiled kids. That's what's happening now, which is good. Hey, they have good controllers.
Hey, I grew up poor, so I think we probably overcompensate here. Yeah. But I've probably got like 8 or 9 Xbox One controllers, and I'm kind of in the same boat too, where I'm like, what the fuck am I doing with all of these?
Yeah, that's why I haven't done VR yet. You know, setting up all that stuff, even though I'm interested in it, I don't want a bunch of more stuff in my living room.
Yeah, I don't know where I'd put a VR headset, like. Yeah, that's one of the big reasons I haven't jumped into it either. Is like, where am I going to put this shit? How am I going to actually manipulate it? Like, I can't. I'm right there with you.
Yeah, as far as PC VR goes, I don't think now is a really good time to get into it. Mm-hmm. I think we're just about to hit a generation shift in that. Wireless is going to make a huge difference once they get that technology stable.
And cheap. You know,
and cheaper,
because right now it's like $300 to get the wireless add-ons for like the Rift or the Vive,
and the next gen graphics cards with ray tracing, if that's going to apply. The announcement I know is tomorrow, and we're, you know, as the prices come down on the VR stuff too, and the obviously the equipment gets better, that's when I think it's going to see a second life. I don't think it's completely dead. I think it's just on a lull and it's going to kind of come back again.
No, I think once it's like all in one,
that's
what you're seeing. You're seeing some of that with the half-step phone standalone ones.
I have a Dream.
The Rift Go.
Whatever.
Oculus Go.
Oculus Go. And
Daydream.
Well, Daydream, yeah. The
shitty cardboard.
There's that. There's also that Lenovo Mirage headset as well.
Yep.
So that's a bit better, but still, you don't have the processing power to really do VR justice in that. You really need a dedicated graphics card for that.
See, for me, my other big reason for me is I'm not somebody that's remotely worried about getting motion sickness, but like that's one of the things that I have thought about. And then I'm also, I try to play everything in as high a frame rate as possible. Yeah. Imagine VR and like just even just a subpar frame rate would give me the worst headache possible. Yeah, it would just be like, I'd either puke or I'd just be like, yeah, this was a waste of money.
Well, that's why PSVR isn't really a good thing, because you want to definitely make sure you're hitting like, you know, high frames. You're going to feel sick. Like, that's the reality, even if you aren't.
Well, PSVR, they have a mandated minimum frame rate of at least 60 all the way up to 90, because they don't let games.
Yeah.
It probably depends on the game, especially.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
As somebody that uses it, it works really well, but there are definitely games that it's like I don't play many racing games on it, because the motion on that stuff, if they don't do it right, I think I was out for about a whole day because of Drive Club after like three races, because the first person stuff felt really good, but after three races, I was like, ooh, this is not going very well.
Yeah,
and it's always up to the person as well.
Yeah,
because people have different issues, and you can watch my video of Drive Club. By the end, you can hear me be like, "Oh, this isn't going good, guys. I gotta stop."
You can hear Chris like,
it's not like vomit inducing. It's just like my head just feels
your head and your stomach too, or
not the stomach, just the head. Oh. It just feels like you're out of it.
Yeah, it's just cognitive
dissonance.
I
don't know if I would get sick.
I think you probably would.
Some people don't.
I got sick. We were whale watching in Cape Cod. I didn't think it was possible to get sick on a boat for me, but I did. So maybe I can get sick.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, there's some people who are just like, oh, take off all the safeguards. I can handle all this.
And you're
like,
not Bruce Willis and Unbreakable, John. Right. You would get sick.
I don't know. I can't see VR making me sick, but I don't know. Like I said, I didn't think I could get sick on a boat.
This sounds like a challenge.
I know.
Challenge.
Play Drive Club for like streaming for like 24 hours.
Oh dear.
I just do endurance races.
Yeah. So it's probably also like mentioned that PSVR has actually been selling pretty well. 3 million.
Yeah.
You know, that's nothing to sneeze at.
Let me ask you guys a question. Is there anything compelling that would make you want to do something in VR over just playing it normally? Because I can't think of anything.
That's because you haven't used it. I have it. There are a number of games in there that are fantastic. Like Super Hot VR is amazing. If you want to feel like you're in the Matrix, dodging bullets, like physically dodging bullets, throwing just anything you can get your hand on at enemies to take them out, or just you can hold up your gun to block bullets.
I know I would love it too, because I have, John and I both have 34-inch ultra wide monitors that I sit very close to mine. I already feel immersed, right? So I'm somebody who loves big screens and feeling like I'm in the game, you know, shutting out the world, put on the headphones. I would love it. I do have a concern about feeling kind of ill, and I'm waiting for the full wireless kit and the less junk I have to put around and pin something to my wall and have something on my desk. I'm waiting for it to just get easier to use. I think that would be a good kind of push for me forward. And also, John, you always say the killer app, right? You're looking for the game that's going to force you to do it.
Yeah,
I agree with that. I mean, like, for me, it's three things. So I actually bought a PSVR at launch. So, I mean, I'm totally into that ecosystem. But for me, it was such a pain to set up. When I can imagine the HTC Vive and the Oculus are also a pain to set up. Well, yeah, because you have all these wires and shit. And not only that, you have to make sure that you have to have the room for it. So the three things are going to be, one, price. You know, not everyone's going to want to spend, you know, $180, $200, $300, $400, whatever we paid for it. Two would be the space. If you can't make the space in your home, there's no way you can make it work. Like, for me, I have to have like an extra person, put the helmet on me. That way I can make sure I'm holding the controllers right and shit like that.
So you need an assistant.
Are you kidding me? Wait, you have to have someone help you do this?
Because if you put the helmet on, you have no idea where the controllers are.
Exactly.
So, that's why you get all your stuff before you put it on.
Well,
dude, I'm actually officially out now just hearing that shit. You know how embarrassing that would be? Yeah. No, like, baby, come, like, calling my wife. Baby, come help me find the controllers. I'm jacked into the
Matrix. I hope you never go blind. You're not going to be able to find your way to the bathroom. Put the controllers in front of you on the coffee table. Sit down and grab them.
Yeah, it's like, put them within reach.
Yeah. It's a funny thing.
Or you get, like, a utility belt.
Penny arcade disasters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or get like those little mitten holders on your wrist.
get a utility.
Yeah, like so though. I mean, if I'm going to get more stuff in order to make it more convenient for it to work, it's like, what's the point?
So I think the controllers themselves... have.
Go ahead, Denver.
Yeah, so I also actually work in a gaming studio, and we have a PSVR set up there as well. And our Move controllers are never charged. So, okay, cool. Let's go ahead and charge them at the same time. Another, like, first-world problem is our TV is so big and our PS4 is, like, so close to it. We have to actually stand literally right in front of it, and that ruins the calibration. So, you know, there's the calibration, there's the setup, all this stuff. It just makes it a total, you know, it's just not fun at all. And honestly, the only time I ever played is if there's a game that's totally, like, worth the experience. Like, for now, for me, like, my favorite games on there are Job Simulator, Resident Evil 7, and Superhot, like Chris mentioned. But aside from that, like, the really good games are too far and far and few between. It's, I don't know, it hardly makes it worth the investment. But the thing that I really like about PSVR is the fact that PlayStation continues to support it. And yeah, honestly, as long as you have the content...
Yeah, they didn't pull a Vita on it.
Yeah, they're all in on it, really, aren't they?
Yeah. Sony especially, because they're just funding people. They have, as far as we know, the biggest user base, because HTC and Oculus have not released numbers for their things.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like, I guess we're doing better. Sony's the only one bragging about it.
And HTC and Oculus aren't exactly coming in at mass market price points either.
Yeah. Yep. Really.
Yeah, their launch like bundles are now around $400, but their newer ones with the upgraded, you know, resolution and all that, that's starting to get up there like $800.
Yeah, that's not how you get market penetration.
Yeah, but it seems like everybody that's involved is, you know, in it for the long haul, willing to take the lumps right now just to get people excited about it and get them used to this stuff and knowing that it'll keep growing.
Yeah.
And yeah, Sony's definitely has some cool stuff there. They also got the biggest user base, so everything is generally going to come to them, even if they don't start on PlayStation first. But yeah, so they've hit 3 million. They also sort of announced the top 10 most played games for PSVR, which is Skyrim VR. Makes a lot of sense. That's a big one. Because the idea of playing Skyrim VR where you're not just confined to a cursor, where you can have your fire coming out of your wrists and spreading it all around, just whatever directions you can point it at, that has a lot of implications just for fucking around and taking out enemies and all that. Like PlayStation VR Worlds, Rec Room, which is a great game. That's a free-to-play thing where it's part social experience. You just hang around and... is like a rec room with other people just playing little games and such, but you can also, they have a battle royale mode in there now that you can play with others. And that's just really cool. And like RE7, as Dan Reb said, if you need a game to test how much horror you can stand in VR, that's one to do it. Like play
just make
VR,
sure to take precautions depending arcade style.
Yeah,
dude, if I played Resident Evil in VR, I'd probably jump into a wall, like, and hurt myself. Like, I don't think that'd be something I'd do. Like, I'm good watching it on a TV or something. That's big enough.
Well, to hear them tell it, just have a tarp.
Yeah.
Right. Well, let me tell you just from my personal experience as somebody who does get motion sickness, fairly easily. I cannot use the PSVR for a very long amount of time. Because I will get motion sick. There are currently some issues that the PSVR has right now that makes it virtually unplayable for me. Specifically, and this kind of goes for like a lot. Well, okay, so first of all is sort of the sensitivity of the thing, because the thing is really... it's really sensitive and
it captures a lot of the head.
And very jittery. Which, you know, and keep in mind, considering that you basically have tunnel vision with that thing, it makes it difficult. And especially when it's like, it's essentially just a glorified single screen in a void. That in particular is really bad. That's just me. But
yeah, you guys have officially talked me out of this. I don't think I'll ever waste my money on it.
Yeah, it's sounding worse and worse.
Yeah, like as this conversation is going on, I was like, oh, this sounds kind of cool. And then it was like, oh man, this sounds really fucking terrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, just give us some time. Right? Yeah. You know, these are issues that will eventually get ironed out.
Yeah.
You have to let us crazy people work out the kinks.
Yeah.
Yep.
Then you guys can jump in.
Yeah, we'll vomit, so you don't have to.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and they got some nice stuff coming up in the near future. They got a Creed game, boxing game, coming out in September.
I thought you were talking about the shitty man. I was like, no. This is another reason not to buy VR.
Yeah, they got Astro Bot Rescue Mission, which is a cool little 3D platformer.
Hmm.
The original version of that was in Playroom VR.
Right.
It's like a free thing, and everybody loves it. It's a really cool way to have like a 3D platformer, but you're the camera.
Hmm.
And you can sort of get up and look around and find the secrets and like, oh, I have to go over here for this this collectible thing, that sort of stuff. And there's Evasion that's coming out. It's a first-person shooter. It uses the aim controller. That looks really cool, sort of sci-fi shooter. Blood and Truth, which is sort of follow-up to a game that was in PlayStation VR Worlds, which is kind of a first-person light gun kind of game. But it's kind of set in the UK, sort of right. England. And that is supposed to be coming out, I think, later this year. Deracine, I think it's coming out this year. That's the From Software game.
Yep.
They're making like a weird VR adventure game.
Weird.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah. There's a Firewall Zero that comes out on the 28th, next week. That is supposed to be kind of like Rainbow Six, the original Rainbow Six in VR. It's like a first-person shooter kind of thing. And that's, I got some nice stuff coming up.
Yep.
So, yeah.
And don't forget the Tetris effect.
Oh, yeah, that too. Yes. That's, there's another game that I'm not going to play on 2D. I'm only playing that in VR because I want all of that coming into my eyes, I guess.
Yeah. So, yeah. So give VR some time. We'll figure it out as we go.
Yeah.
So let's move on to this next one here, because, I'm actually really genuinely excited about this one, because I'm one of the few who actually remember this game when it was supposed to come out. DICE was working on a Genesis game towards the end of Genesis's life. It was called Hardcore.
I didn't even know DICE was around back then.
Yep, they were still around. It was a 2D run-and-gun style game. It looked really good. It had, well, the kind of technological prowess that DICE was even then known for.
Yeah.
Well, it got canceled at the last minute. The Strictly Limited Games is bringing it back to the PS4 and PS Vita, I should point that out. And it's coming out in 2019. What I find really exceptionally interesting about this is that they're actually developing it on original Genesis dev kits. And then porting up.
Nice.
Wow. Holy shit, this is fucking gorgeous, Phil.
Yes.
Yeah, it's. I'm looking at screenshots of it right now, and wow, that is.
Check out the trailer.
For Genesis, great. That is pretty.
Yeah.
I can see myself dying a million times a day.
Yeah. Hey, have you heard about
that? It looks pretty vanilla to me.
I was trying to say it looks like one of the many Steam indie games that he would pass over. Yeah.
It looks very generic.
Yeah.
I don't know why you guys are jizzing over there.
This might be a jizz-free zone show, John. Be careful with your language.
Oh, no. I mean, we've dropped the F-bomb several times
already.
Okay,
good. Yeah.
All right. I'm over here clutching my pearls at the thought of ejaculation. How dare you, sir?
I don't know what's going on over here.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it looks fine. It looks exactly how it should look, right? I mean, yeah. I don't see anything that looks unique. I mean, yeah, it's cool that this game was going to die and some indie studio picked it up. It's a good story.
It's it's not some indie studio. It's all ex-DICE alumni. And
right, but DICE themselves aren't releasing it, right?
Them themselves, no. Strictly Limited is, but it's like...
Right. That's
yeah, it's still the founders and everybody who was involved. The notable thing about this story is that everybody that was originally involved in it is still originally involved in it and are finishing what they started. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, so that's what really gets me excited in the Nether regions.
You'll have to excuse John. He hates anything nostalgia, but he has a basement full of arcade machines. And your bird agrees.
He needs the right kind of nostalgia.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Mm. I think with that in mind,
our opinion of you will change on whether or not you like Trails in the Sky.
Like what?
Oh, Trails in the Sky.
Yeah,
we'll get you into that. We'll get to it.
I'm not sure this is the question
we hit pretty much every guest on the show with.
Yeah, Trails in the Sky, it's a Japanese RPG series. I don't think this is something John would actually care for, to be honest.
You're asking the wrong guy.
Yeah. So
I got a question for you, John. What is it? So Steam is obviously full of these indie titles that look like that. You just not a fan, or?
I just, the only one that ever really captured me was probably Shovel Knight, you know? But I don't know why. I just don't really gravitate towards them. I just don't feel the need to play them. I don't know what it is. I mean, I've certainly, like, I played that Gravedigger. Michelle, what was that game called?
I think it was Gravedigger. Gravekeeper, maybe.
Gravekeeper game that just came out, you know, and that has an 8-bit style. It's fine. And I got into Axiom Verge.
We're just talking about Octopath Traveler, which has an 8-bit style. You're very selective. If Nintendo was releasing this, he'd be all over it. That's good to understand. Yeah.
I feel like there's just too many of
them.
John's
what we call a fanboy. It's very selective perception on what...
There's too many of these kind of games. That's all.
Well, I'll agree with you on that.
But not many from DICE.
Yeah, exactly. Not many from DICE. I mean, for me, for a game to really stand out, there's got to be a good story behind it. And I don't mean, you know, narratively, because, well, that's important too. But it mostly, like, I have to actually connect with the developers who are bringing this game out. You know, if it's just random generic indie developer number 4.
And there's a lot of those, right?
Yeah. You know, it's like, really?
Someone connect with your developers as someone who knows a lot personally. That could be dangerous.
Michelle, remember Axiom Verge? Like I watched like the 8-hour documentary that came with it.
Yeah.
Like I ended up liking the game.
And
more.
Also you never liked Firewatch again after you heard about the guy who made it. You hate like Campo Santo now, so like you hate Firewatch now, so I get that. But
we interviewed Thomas Hatt, the guy that did Axiom Verge, so
yeah. Like
he's awesome.
Yeah, and after watching the documentary with him,
you got into it.
And knowing how he made that, like I liked the game that much more. So yeah, I get what you're saying. Like you can get
it was our game of the year when it came out.
Yeah. What's that?
It was our game of the year when it came out.
Yep.
So that's what we love that.
We don't like any of the new fancy shit. We're all old.
Oh, that was your guys' game of the year? Was Axiom Verge?
Yeah, 2015 game of the year. That was us.
Well, that's why I'm here, because I like new stuff, and I'm a future whore. I don't like the old nostalgia shit, but John should. I mean, you love this. This is your wheelhouse, so to hear you being like, poo-pooing it just because it's 8-bit, I don't get that.
And I imagine this is probably being made by people that grew up around the same stuff.
Yeah.
It's like that's what a lot of indie games are being made right now are people that grew up in the early to mid 90s.
Yeah, so I was born in 1980, so I mean, I grew up on all this stuff too. I had an NES, I had a PC when I was 5. You know, I'd been there, done that. You know what I mean? It's like I love future and technology, which is why it's weird I don't have the VR thing. Like you said, I'm usually doing all that stuff early. But I think, John, like you said, there's a lot of them, but I do think this is a unique story bringing back that old game.
Yeah.
So. That's interesting that you're all about the future stuff and not any of the more nostalgic, because I was born in 81, and I find actually most of the future stuff now is usually just a gigantic waste of time. Like I feel like a lot of the big stuff that comes out, but I'm also, it's ironic actually, maybe that's the paradox too, because I'm also a graphics whore and all of that stuff. She gets mad at the shit that we buy.
I have a 265 inch OLED HDR 4K. Right. You know, like I'm getting all that stuff. Yeah. I'm playing all this stuff. Like I want to move on. Like I grew up on the old Sierra Adventure games, right? I'm not going to go play King's Quest right now. It's just not going to happen.
I think maybe it's more about the focus nostalgia of it. Like I think if there's a focus nostalgia, maybe not the right way to put it, but maybe the type of game it is also matters. Like Shovel Knight is something that's really fun. Axiom Verge was something that's really fun.
Yes.
But as opposed to like generic Metroidvania, like 24, I could see that being a thing. But, but you know, I'm with you too. Like my wife's like, your TV has way too many letters in it. Like OLED, HDR, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But then I'll use that to play something that does look like Axiom Verge. So yeah.
I
need to consider this. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So, all right. Let's get on to something that's actually kind of cool. At least I find.
John will insult it. Don't worry.
You're all for two.
It's all right. So THQ Nordic, they've well, we know them because
do they even exist anymore?
they release a lot of stuff.
They release a lot of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
And now this blob is slowly starting to recongeal as they've reacquired the Time Splitters and Second Sight licenses.
All right. So they got Time Splitters again? Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I assume they're going to be releasing those old games onto the new platforms now.
That's
they've done with
I
all their other properties.
Start. Yeah.
Yeah, because Time Splitters was kind of a... I mean, it was a cult classic when it originally came out, but...
It's okay.
It didn't really... I don't think it sold that well at first.
Well, yeah, I mean, I actually agree with John here. I mean, like, Time Splitters was okay. Second
I had it on,
was
I had it on,
okay.
I had it on GameCube. I remember that Time Splitters was
supposed to... That was
PS2. To... What's that?
That was part two.
Okay, well, that's the one I played, whatever was on GameCube. And I remember it was going to be a big fuck... It was supposed to be a big fucking deal. I remember being disappointed by it.
I mean, it was a big deal because GameCube didn't have shit.
it's also Free Radical, which
true,
is
unfortunately.
Former rare people that made Perfect Dark and GoldenEye. So it's anyway, those people kept the torch going as long as they could.
As I was saying, like THQ primarily went under because every game they released was average to mediocre. And here they are again just reacquiring their average to mediocre series.
Well, THQ went under.
Damn, listen to Darev. Oh, you like this? Fuck you.
I mean, like, I can't understand, like, why they, they're trying to reacquire everything that made them what they were before when everything they made was, like, you know, what they were.
Well, but
and
the
honestly,
part of the reason they went bankrupt, too, though, is that you draw shit, like, where they were trying
yeah,
to... That, that's
they invested
true.
All
yeah,
their money in this weird. Tablet that didn't
those
sell.
Those tablets are all just there, yeah. But, yeah. like, again, like, the main thing is I don't see any of these games taking off in this industry unless they're all, like, $30-$40.
Well, they're... acquiring this stuff so they can just make cheap remasters, and then that stuff does well. They know, okay, we can make a new game and find a good team for that and sort of expand on it in a way that they're doing with, like, what is the... Yeah, Darksiders.
Yeah.
See, I got a soft spot for Darksiders, but that's just as a friend of mine worked on it, so...
Yeah, well, Darksiders 3 coming out this fall. Yeah.
Got that old 90s aesthetic too from comic art, so
yeah. Well, I mean, it was a Joe Madureira joint, so
yeah.
What they should do is repartner up with Aki and then reacquire the WWE license and then make games from there.
Oh, they're making more than enough money with those shit games at 2K.
And then
god damn.
Yeah. So that's not good.
That's never gonna happen.
We managed to shit all over this story, so
yeah, next.
Yeah, nice.
So, Phil, what else are you excited about that we can say is garbage?
Yeah, it's sad.
Spyro Reignited Trilogy has been delayed.
Okay, there's a
issues here.
Well, there's a story behind this about why people think it may have been delayed. But before I get to that, just real quick, I'm actually really excited for this game because I never actually got to finish the original Spyro, and I never got to play the other two games. But, yeah, he's playing with his bell again, I know.
You may want to tape that down next week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Fairies coming in.
Yeah, don't worry. Phil can... Phil's an audio wizard. He can edit it all out.
No way.
No.
He's
not the
editing
frequency's
those.
That high.
No.
But anyway, the point is, basically what they've done is they've gone back and basically remade the games from the ground up. It's still the essential structure. Enemy placements are still the same, but they've gone back and upgraded the graphics to basically modern Pixar level. But the reason people think that they've delayed this game until November is because it's been rumored that only the first game is actually on the disc. That the other
total horseshit.
That the other two games you actually have to get online.
Totally dumb.
Hope it doesn't have licensed music.
Oh god, no.
That's how they did Bayonetta 2, by the way, on the Switch, right? Only one.
It was the
of
other way
was
around. It was Bayonetta 1 was the one that you downloaded, and then 2 was on the cart.
Cart, right?
Yeah.
Although that one wasn't. That's not really a licensing or anything like that problem. That's more of a capacity issue.
Sure.
Yeah.
So
I thought they were just being cheap.
Wait, are you guys suggesting? Too. Are you suggesting this is a licensing problem?
No, this is just Activision being shit.
No, that's just me. That's just me talking shit.
Okay. I mean, so, Bayonetta 2 was actually marketed as Bayonetta 2 with Bayonetta included.
Maybe they did this with the Switch in mind. Collection. Is it coming to the Switch? I'm sorry, I don't know much about it. Or it's not
it
coming
is,
to the Switch. So maybe that's why?
Yeah,
it's but on PS4 everything. And Xbox One, they have Blu-rays.
Yeah,
they could fill these up if they wanted to.
Yeah, right. So it's not a space issue. It's just, I think Activision wanted to rush it out the door, and they got enough pushback on that that they decided to just delay it until they could get all three of them out at the same time.
Well, yeah, it could be that it's three games, right?
Right.
Yes,
yeah, so yes, the original trilogy.
Yeah, they're working on it.
Yeah. Yeah, they could be working on 2 and 3 and then just flip the Switch the day before, essentially. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, we need to,
Does it really matter at this point what's on the disc? Because, I mean...
Yes, it does, because not everybody has the kind of... who wants to play that game has the kind of web connection that could get...
But there's so many games these days that you put it in on day one and there's like a 12 gig download like right away. I mean, it happens so many times.
The disc
I mean,
is DRM at this point. You have to install and do everything on it. Anyway.
I mean, I remember when the Tony Hawk game basically replaced everything in that was on the disc.
Well, that was because the only thing that was actually on the disc was the tutorial.
Exactly. So Michelle said, it's just DRM at this point.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it's sort of so. Just to take a step back, because I don't have an internet issue, but we do have caps where I live, and I also work at home, so we constantly run up against our bandwidth caps. So I do prefer buying things where pretty much most of it is on the disc, and hopefully, I know we have to deal with like the day one patches and all of that, but I think it also has to deal with the way that a lot of these video game developers deal with the patching technology in general and compression and all of that stuff. So I think it matters for a different reason. But I do agree, like obviously discs are DRM for the most part, but I think one of the things we talk a lot about on our show is you know, how you're playing this stuff now and then what that's going to look like in the future. And one of the things that is definitely a concern, I think, is when that stuff, like we had talked about just, you know, earlier with Forza, when those servers go down, what happens if you have this product? Are you able to get it in the future if it's not on the disc? Like, what does any of that look like? And for PCs, it's relatively clear because the digital distribution platform on PCs is so robust and there are so many options where you don't really have that for consoles. So I think one of the reasons that we do talk about that kind of stuff on the show is that these companies are going to have to essentially give more robust ways to get their games. And right now they're really not. So making sure you still are able to take advantage of the product that you own 5 years, 10 years down the line when people stop using that hardware or whatever the case may be, that's why that stuff being on the disc is actually important. Because you don't run into that on PC.
As we move forward, though, we have to adapt. Because I just installed a game that was 100 gigs the other day. And as graphics get better, I know we're looking at 8K in the future. But like this, things are going to get bigger and bigger. And maybe discs aren't going to be the best way to do it if we can't come up with some other system on how to, especially for console. I mean, but that's just the way technology is going. It's the internet companies and America in general that it's act together.
Companies are a big part of the problem. And as long as you have people like, you know, Comcast and AT&T in charge and not having those options, you know, for people to switch and look at something, I think it's going to be one of those, like, it's always funny. Like, I don't know, you know, obviously Michelle, we're roughly the same age. I'm sure you remember, especially if you were somebody that's really kind of hardcore on some of the tech, people have been saying we wouldn't have consoles for 15 years and then everything was going to be digital distribution and everything else that. And we're finally at the point now where it seems like something like that could be possible. But I think that the big thing that's going to hold it back are the internet companies, are the AT&Ts and Comcast and Charter and everybody else like that, because they want to essentially charge for access. And so I think for some people that are looking at something like that, that's also one of those things like, yes, we absolutely do need to adapt, but there's only so much that the consumer can do if the corporations that are involved are not willing to do so without having a dollar
tag. They can move. No, I'm just kidding. Especially as we move to streaming games, right? That's the next big thing. Then we're going to have people like we've got Amazon streaming and we're streaming on Netflix. So you're streaming games. Like you said, a lot of people are going to run into this where even if they're not downloading the games, they're still going to run into their caps. And the internet companies are what are kind of steering gaming in a way too for a lot of people. They can't do a lot of things with gaming. We constantly hear that like, well, that's great for you guys, but for me, I can't do this and it sucks.
And it's one of those things that I even worry about in my home. We only have three people that live here, but my son is constantly online. He's constantly playing stuff. My wife plays WoW.
Yeah.
I play WoW. And then we also work at home and we work for a software company. So we're constantly gobbling up bandwidth. And
I go over my 1 terabyte every month. That's why I'm doing unlimited now. I feel you.
Yeah, so it is one of those things where it's just like where and yeah, like when I downloaded Forza Horizon 3 on my PC, and it was like 85 gigs. I was like, oh my god! Like,
can you go to Starbucks or something?
Not with my desktop.
Be there all day. Yeah, on a thumb drive and just
It's strange though. Like, give me another latte if I'm halfway done.
Yeah, Lee rolls up with his car with his PC in there. It's like, all right, he's got to get it downloaded.
Oh, sure, I bet you there's people that do that, by the way.
As long as you order a coffee, you'll be fine.
Yeah, exactly. So,
eventually, it's going to be a lot of the platform holders put in the place a way for it to survey what you have on your system. So, if you don't have 4K, it should say, okay, you don't need the 4K assets. You can save some space there. You're English, so you don't necessarily need all the Japanese or Italian or Spanish stuff in there. It can slim it down. That's what Microsoft is starting to work on now.
Yeah, right. Rainbow Six Siege did that. Like, you can go get the extra HD pack, which I downloaded. Yeah. Like, it was optional. And I think that's a smart way to handle it, too. Like, here's the bare bones. If you want more, get it.
Yeah. And there's some games that do, like, do you want to download the multiplayer first or the campaign?
Mm-hmm. Right. Some games on Xbox One do that kind of stuff too, Michelle. Yeah. Like Quantum Break does. You can download all the cutscenes locally or stream.
Yeah, I think for the Xbox One, I think even like with stuff like Forza and stuff like that, it'll give you the option like which assets do you want to download.
Right.
So because we have that with
partitioning it.
Yeah, we have that upstairs where like I had to actually split the account because we have the same live tag on the one upstairs, and the one upstairs is just an S. And so, I was looking at that. It was like all of a sudden, like, oh, look, here's another 80 gigs for Forza. God damn it. This wasn't supposed to download the 4K assets.
Yeah.
So, I think if they get those controls in place, it'll be good, too. But also at the same time, though, I think that also comes down to what I mentioned a minute ago is really how they optimize a lot of that stuff and compression used and all that. Because, like, I don't know if you guys saw, like, on the console stuff, like the Master Chief Collection basically re-downloaded itself, like, 5 times during the patches.
Yeah. Because and they're releasing a new update at some point. They're beta testing the finally fixed edition coming up soonish, and that's going to be another huge update.
Yeah, the 5 years too late edition.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. So let's end
really, I guess it comes down to is fuck Comcast.
Basically, yeah.
At least for
me. Pretty much. We just do it with a rusty fishing scaler. Just
there's our episode
nice
title.
And softly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah, so, I solved this problem of
hold
this
on, hold
game.
On. Michelle, you have a terabyte cap where
you
are?
Yes. I live near Irvine in Orange County in Laguna Beach.
That explains it.
I'm from Connecticut, though. We used to have Optimum Online, and I don't know what they're doing now, but I love the internet. Here, I came here. We used to have Unlimited, then they added the cap, and now I go over it, and I'm doing the Unlimited. I think it's just we have to – I know it sucks for some people. They don't have it available to them, but I feel like I have to do it. I don't want to live in fear. Like, can I download this? Can I install this? Like, it sucks, and I just don't want to do it anymore.
Well, what if you don't want to
ask getting
you,
that warning on your screen. You have used 90%
exactly.
of your cap.
Yeah. They're doing the browser thing, yeah.
How much are you paying to go to do Unlimited compared to what the normal
amount is?
It's
like $40 extra or something like that.
That ain't bad.
Yeah, I feel like it's $10 over, I think, per gig after that.
Yeah,
ridiculous.
Yeah, I think for Comcast, it's they give you 50 gigs because that's what we have Comcast, and the only reason we have it is because we only have AT&T and Comcast as choices, and Comcast is way more stable than AT&T. I live in Atlanta.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we do pretty good. There's a lot of tech companies around here, but the infrastructure is so far behind. And Comcast is –
what's your cap?
Our cap here is 300 gigs.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so that is impressive.
Yeah, and then we have to – and then if you want to do unlimited, it's 50 over whatever your rate plan is. And so, like, and again, because we work at home, we've been able to get our company, like, when we do blow over the cap, our company will help take care of it. But it's one of those things where I sort of always end up arguing that point, even though it doesn't really affect me, because I can only imagine what it's like for somebody who's like, so I have this choice to download a game, and then I got to pay. Because if you go over, it's $10 for every 50 gigs. That's what I was thinking, like, when you said 1 terabyte, like, damn, what the hell could I do with 1 terabyte?
A lot of 4K movies being downloaded.
1 terabyte's what I have.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah.
Good old ATL.
That's life in the Peach State. I can tell you from experience.
Uh-oh.
And I've gone up against...
See, he's lucky. He lives in Atlanta. I live in Macon. And fortunately, we've got it now, so we've got unlimited data. But we had to live with Verizon for quite a few years, and Yeah, we'd hit that data cap in just a couple weeks. It sucks.
Yeah. Metered internet connections are something that should just not exist. Yeah.
Agree. That's right.
Yeah. So let's end up with our final story of the day, and it's Valve is rumored to be getting into the game streaming business with Steam TV.
But this has been kind of debunked already, though.
Well, they said it's coming. It was just a Dota 2 International kind of preview. It went live too early, but it was Dota 2 Internationals are tomorrow. So they were getting that set up, sort of premiering it then, I think. And I think it's happening. It's just sort of they hit the launch button too soon.
There's no way they're not going to do this in the future. Yeah. They already have the digital distribution platform on lock. It makes total business sense for them to do it. Even if they fuck up the launch, they could totally end up becoming a premier version of it because they already have everybody jacked into their ecosystem.
Yeah. And I've browsed the store a lot, and they'll say, like, oh, so-and-so is streaming this game, and then it pops up at the top of the game page.
Yes, that's
it's like, I just want to look at the screenshots. I don't want to see you playing this thing.
I just want to look at the screenshots because I have a bandwidth cap.
Yeah.
That's right. We don't want the video to start playing. No, I haven't seen them sneaking that in, especially with like Realm Royale and a couple of other games. They started featuring streamers, and I was talking to John. I was like, should we try doing something like this? Do you want, and we just didn't do it yet, but I still feel like it's going to be really hard to corner in on that Twitch market. I mean, even Mixer and YouTube haven't really made as much of a dent as you think.
Microsoft is doing that on Xbox too. If you go to the game page, it shows all the people streaming right
now. My dad was angry about that. Yeah.
Really?
Just the other day he was yelling about it. He's like, I don't want to see these idiots. You know, I just want to play a game.
Yeah. I think Microsoft's pumping of Mixer is a little bit on the heavy-handed side.
Yeah.
I mean, that whole dashboard is just so bloated.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it totally is. I mean, all I need on Xbox is like my games and apps and show me what's for sale
right
now.
Well, that failed. Like, we want to be your entertainment system. Buy it with the Kinect. Like, that
sort
of thing.
They're still pushing a lot of shit on there. I mean, they're very conflicted on the Xbox, but.
Like, I find it odd that you watch Netflix through your Xbox. Like, that's very strange to me. Like, we have smart TVs when you can just hit the Netflix button or, you know, you've got a Google Chromecast.
Because I bounce around a lot in there. I like being able to bounce.
Why have your Xbox on to watch Netflix? Like, I don't want that to be my entertainment hub. It should just be where I play games. It
makes a lot of sense.
I don't think so.
I think it can go both ways, because what's interesting about that is I think it depends on how you use the device. Like, I have an Apple TV and I have an Xbox. I got to play. I mean, I got all the stuff. I love my Apple TV.
But I actually have Netflix on my PS4.
So. Well, the reason, but see, we mainly do Netflix and stuff on our Apple TV because we have one of the 4K ones. And then, you know, we ended up doing the Xbox and doing all that. My son would much rather watch everything through the Xbox, because that's the thing that he uses the most. So I think it really depends on how the device is used.
Right. If you have a smart TV, you just hit the Netflix button.
Yeah, but see, I have my smart TV. I got a Samsung. I don't remember what model it was. It was 65-inch. 4K. Blah blah blah. The apps suck. They're terrible.
That could be
slow.
Get a Google 4K Chromecast. Those are better and cheaper.
But there's just no reason to buy that. It's all on the Xbox.
Yeah, but you got to have this thing running constantly. Like you said, yours is loud and hot.
Well,
and
the Xbox to me is
it's
like
an extra step to have to turn something on. I just want it instantly.
It's my cable box to me, because I use that more than I'll bounce around between Hulu and Amazon and Twitch and HBO Go and all that, all within
Xbox.
Do all
that off your phone.
I don't want to do that.
Just tap a button. I have an iPad as my TV controller. Yeah.
Well, so I'm curious why you would have an iPad as your TV controller, but still fuck with a Chromecast instead of an Apple TV, just with the ability to like throw things.
I hate Apple, it's Apple shit, and they don't do anything good that you need to pay extra for. But I mean, I have my iPad, and it's like an old one, and I just leave it like it's like stitched to like my wall, like with a Velcro, and I just use it to like touchpad control everything, send things to the Chromecast. Basically accepts anything. I also have a server PC on all of my TVs. So I have a little mini server PC and like a wireless keyboard, and I'll just launch like things that way. Like there's so much stuff on the internet that if everybody had a little server PC, they wouldn't need any of this. Like you just like can watch or do anything there. And so that's just the way I have it set up. I would never turn on my console to watch Netflix.
To be fair though, like, you know, as a sort of a counterpoint to what you're saying, isn't your server PC always on? Right.
Yes,
so he always has his Xbox on.
There's no way you always have your Xbox on day and night. There's no way.
No, but the thing is, the Xbox to me is like my cable box. So if I sit down on the TV,
yeah, it sounds like he's using it the same way. Same way you use your server.
I don't think so. My server PC is like always on. Uses no electricity, no fan, nothing. It's
really? Wow, is it solar powered? How's it doing that? No, it is.
Go compare the units for the power supply. It's like they make these server PCs to not be intensive. They're not. Xbox is not made to run 24 hours a day.
I don't really know where we're going here. What's the point of this?
My point is having an Xbox running 24 hours a day is not the same as a tiny server PC, which is.
But I don't have it running 20. I
know you don't, which is why I think it's stupid that you have to turn it on first. If you have, so that's the counterpoint I'm saying is not correct because you don't leave it running 24 hours a day.
It's a fast boot though, the Xbox.
Well, there's no SSD in it, so it can't be that fast.
No, it doesn't.
I'm pretty happy with my Hackfire stick.
There you go.
That's another way to do it. Yeah.
Can we end on an argument? Is that
so? Really, what
I have to ask a question before we end because I gotta ask you, John. How was the brisket?
It was the best piece of meat I've ever made in my life, and people are still talking about it.
People who ate it, you mean?
I've shared it with a lot of people. Yeah, it was 5 pounds of meat. I had to share it.
Okay.
And, that sounds like something that would strictly come out of somebody's mouth if they lived in the South. Like, oh, yeah, this barbecue, man.
Yeah.
Got to give it to everybody.
So is our show title, How is the Brisket?
Yeah,
I think so. It really has to be.
We got it.
Are you guys smoking meats over there at all?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Oh, it's summer, dude. My wife, it's barbecue season over here.
My wife did a brisket last week.
No shit.
Yeah, man. My wife's an incredible cook, though.
Are you getting, like, the whole Packer brisket or just, like, the flat part?
The moron ribs? Why don't you ask about the moron ribs, John?
we just do the flat part just because we don't have the equipment to sit out there and, like, smoke something for, like, 18 hours. We'll to the rednecks around the corner. But
I don't think the full one would fit in my smoker, honestly, because the flat was already pretty gigantic.
Yeah, and they're not cheap either. So you don't want to
$45 for that piece of meat.
Yeah, you don't want to get a piece of meat to smoke it and then be like, oh well, I fucked this up. There goes $50.
Yeah. How much does the full Packer cost?
Oh God, dude, it's got to be at least $100, $150. So my wife showed me the price and I was like, oh no, we're good. Let's just do the regular.
Are you fucking kidding me? That it's that much?
Yeah, but dude, people aren't. But like, seriously, like at least here where I live, what people will do with that stuff is they'll literally do like pop up barbecue places around here in the summertime.
That's legal. You have to
like food truck type shit.
Yeah, like food truck type shit. So they don't have a food truck. You'll just have some dude out in the fucking parking lot.
With a
sign,
a card table, and an umbrella.
Yeah, I'm gonna
pretty much.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how you know it's good. If this guy has the balls to set up something like this in a parking lot and there's a line, that's some serious barbecue. Yeah. Hey, yeah, but you know what? Marsupial probably tastes good if you smoke
it,
right?
That's true. So. There's methods.
Yeah exactly.
All right. So I guess we'll end it there. thank you very much, John, Michelle, for coming on today.
Thank you. It was fun.
Yeah, maybe we can return the favor at some point. I don't know.
We'll get all six of you on. Or four.
let me get in on that shit.
To be fair, there's normally not this many of us on. It just happened to sort of coincide that it worked out that way.
All right.
Because, we normally don't have this much crosstalk.
No.
It's good, though. You know, we usually do it with just two or three, and I'm not really on shows a lot with a big group of people, but it's definitely a different dynamic that's fun as well.
Anytime where you can get called out for just liking stuff is usually a good thing.
Oh, that's my specialty.
Yeah, so I'm good. All right, so with that, I am going to end the show. So until next week, I have been Filippo D'Anofa for Patrick Mifflin, Lee Lamb, Crystal OG, Dan Rand Victorio, and Brandon Perkins. Well, we'll see you all next week.